far are you going?
About 30 years.
In this week's episode,
it's Cowboys vs. Outlaws, where we review Cowboy Bebop and Outlaw Star.
I think they said Keith Rowe is going to be 50 episodes, but maybe it'll go longer if it's popular. I guess it just depends. But
so wait, are they doing another Dragon Ball after Super, or is it just done for now until they come up with something else?
Well, there's a movie that they're going to be putting out, and then after that, they're probably going to start working on another season of Super, but maybe call it something else. Dragon Ball AF, just finally call it that,
or call it Duper Dragon Ball. So then it's Super Duper.
Yeah, that's what they would do if it was a Power Rangers show. They would just add something else to it, you know, like Super Ninja Charge and all those ridiculous names.
All right, so you've got, I mean, like, they can already travel through time and then travel across galaxies, so it might as well be like Dragon Ball Time Galactic Cop Extreme. I don't know. Like, just make it into a galactic space time cop Dragon Ball show, and then have like the freaking Galactic Patrol guy just making a series about him, which maybe no one will watch because he's such a joke character.
Well, there was like a Jocko manga, but it only ran for a couple months in Japan, and I don't think they even bothered to make an anime version of it because it must not have been very popular, other than the one chapter that was like a retcon of Goku's origin, where they had like a different version of the Bardock story, which was different from the movie.
Gotcha. All right. Do you want to talk about Outlaw Star first before we get into Bebop? Because like Bebop for me, I could probably talk a good chunk of Bebop.
Yeah. So we're gonna do the cons as closing remark material.
Yeah, we can say it because I got some other closing, because I've got like two events I went to, and then there was something else I was gonna talk about, and I figured we'd just save that for closing remarks.
Just a warning, Daft is on the Slack chat talking about how he wants to get on the recording. So I guess we should get the serious part out of the way first before he sabotages stuff. So let's get straight to Outlaw Star.
All right. Well, hang on. Let me get Outlaw Star information pulled up. Okay.
You saw all the episodes, right?
Yes, I did. But I was actually looking at the air dates for if Outlaw Star came out before Bebop, and it did when it aired in January. Well, I'm talking about in Japan, because in Japan, Bebop aired...
Oh, in Japan too?
Yeah, in Japan, Bebop aired January 8th, and then Bebop Outlaw Star aired in January 8th, and then Bebop aired in April. So, really, we can go with the oldest first, which is Outlaw Star, by technically a few months. So...
Yeah, it's interesting. People call it a Bebop ripoff, but it predates Bebop.
It does predate Bebop, and it finished its run before Bebop finished it, or its run. I mean, technically speaking,
Bebop was off because of a hiatus with, like, it was too violent, right?
Well, I think it went under some, I mean, to sum it up from what I remember of the Watanabe panel thing at Animazement a couple years ago, like, the first four episodes were funded by Sunrise Studio, and then they had to go to Bandai, their toy division, to fund the rest of it. Or it was funded by Bandai first, which is why there was, like, because it was one promoted things, it was promoted to sell models. And then after the fourth episode, they had to go to Sunrise Studios to finish out the rest of the animation or the series. So there's this gap where they aired it on that TV station, and they moved it to another station, but it was like months later.
Yeah, so I was just looking on there, and TV Tokyo broadcast it ended the day after Outlaw Star did, and they both aired on TV Tokyo in the spring of 1998. So that's interesting. I wonder which did better in the ratings there, whether it was Bebop or Outlaw Star that was more popular.
See, I thought Outlaw Star did not do well in the ratings, but then also Bebop didn't do well in the ratings also. So that's, I don't know, Japan's really weird about this stuff. Like, the stuff we love in America, like Outlaw Star and Bebop, it did so well here, and then in Japan, no one really cared about it at the time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing is, with Outlaw Star, there is a manga, and with Bebop, there is too, so I'm going to look at those and see which one of those.
Well, there's two different.
First.
Yeah, there's two different times for a manga for Bebop. Well, we haven't even done introductions for this show.
There's one that's from 97 for Bebop, and one that's from 96 for Outlaw Star, so I think Outlaw Star predates Bebop in both the manga and the anime.
Yeah, based on that, I would say so. Alright.
Okay, yeah, that's right, introductions. I'm John Jones, and with me is Yannick.
Well, I don't even say the name of the podcast in case somebody, some dope download it randomly on a drunken spree and they don't know what they're listening to. They're like, who's this John Jones guy? Why should I care? Alright. So, if you're that listener I just called out that is drunkenly listening to this at 2 a.m. and you don't know what you're listening to, well, let me clue you in. This is the Anime of Yesteryear podcast. I am one of your hosts, Dustin, and with me is my co-host, John.
Yes, we're both here.
Yeah, we are both here. And we're going to talk about two anime, prolific anime, that was really big in anime fandom 15-plus years ago when they were both on Cartoon Network roughly about the same time, or actually the same year, in 2001. That's on Outlaw Star and Cowboy Bebop. And then there's also John's Dad, which was the best show of Toonami when he came into the recording. Oh, great. Now we lost John. Well, that's just stellar. That's fantastic. My dad won't stop. He says, my dad won't stop talking. So now I have to entertain you people to fill in time while John's dad wants to interrupt the show, unless he has something constructive to say. Probably not.
No.
Okay. So, all right. Yeah, so I figured we get to Outlaw Star first, Eldest first. So it just finished up airing. This is the first time I've seen this show. We watched it. It was on
Toonami on the Midnight Run, and it was on Adult Swim Action in 2002.
Right,
so
right.
It was on the same block as Cowboy Bebop, even when Adult Swim Action was first starting out.
When it first aired, it was the beginning of 2000. It was the beginning of 2001, and because I remember the promos for it on like regular afternoon Toonami TV, and then eventually moved to the Midnight Run, and eventually got on the Adult Swim block early 2002. And so then now recently it finally came back on last year. So that gave me a chance to watch the whole series of Outlaw Star. Cause prior to that, I only saw like a handful of episodes. And that's the only thing I remember from Outlaw Star. And so based on my first impressions of the show, it's actually
kind
of.
Hold on a second. I'm going to change my network connection because it's really weak and I'm going to just have it connect to my phone.
All right.
Network so that I can actually hear what you're saying.
Oh, wow, really? I'm lagging out on you? Jeez. This is going off to a great start.
And I couldn't tell what you were saying a lot of times, so.
Well, it's on the recording.
Okay, maybe
so
now it'll work better.
Okay.
I can hear you now, so
okay.
Maybe it'll work.
Okay, so what I was saying, if you didn't catch it, was this was my first round, or first time actually watching Outlaw Star all the way through. And I honestly think that it's an all right show. I mean, for me, like, there's some really good stuff about it that I liked. But I can understand, like, you know, seeing this as like a teenager on TV. It would have been like amazing to see, which is why like a lot of people talk this up for like all these years that I everyone told me to go check it out, and I was like, oh, you know, I'll get around to it eventually. And then I, you know, I had a chance to, but it's still, I mean, it's still like a pretty good show. I mean, I know the guys that do Fast Karate for the Gentlemen, they've always, throughout their podcast history, they've always, like, trashed on Outlaw Star. And so I didn't know, like, how, like, really bad it was. But then now that I've seen the whole series, I'm kind of like, well, no, it's not as good as Bebop, but I don't, it's definitely not, like, the worst show.
I didn't know that there were people who hated it.
Well, my buddy Josh, he bought the DVD series from Bandai years ago because he, like, loved it on TV. And then a few years ago, he was telling me that he rewatched it. And he was like, you know, like, it's not as good as I remember. And I guess it's something where, like, it's, like, something, like, interesting and, like, how visually cool it looks on Outlaw Star, like, will definitely appeal to a lot of people who first see it, especially, like, at the time it aired on TV. And then with everybody else seeing, like, what anime has done since then, that's, you look back, you know, 20 years later, and you're like, well, you know, gee, like, it's not all that impressive now that I look back on it. But seeing how this is my first time watching it, like, I don't really have, like, a total negative opinion on the show. Great. Now, I guess your dad is still talking.
Yeah.
Wait, what is he talking to you about?
Putting cheese on the floor.
Why is
it the dog?
And that's vital information he has to tell you, that he put cheese on the floor for the dog.
Yeah.
This is a man I'm going to have to meet one day. You're not so sure about that.
Sure.
Okay.
You can do it.
I don't know if you picked up anything I just said.
Yeah, I was not hearing you.
Oh my god!
You were saying something about, like, at the time people were telling you that it was really good, and then later on they said it was not as good when they saw it again. Is that what the gist?
Yeah,
of it was?
That's the gist of what I said. Yeah, like, because I take it you probably saw this, like, on Toonami when it first aired as a kid, and then you see it now, like, how was that different for you watching it now than it was then?
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure how much of it I saw when it was first on. I mean, I definitely remember the look of the show, but I feel like what I remember from the show is the Dreams promo. Like, that is the main thing that, to me, is memorable about the show, is that promo that they aired for years after they stopped airing the show. I think probably even into the Tom 3 era. On weekdays, but definitely throughout the whole Tom 2 era, they would air the Dreams promo.
Right.
And even when it came back on April Fool's Day, they aired it several times because it's, like, the best Toonami music video that they've ever done. And it has all these different clips of dialogue of all the highlights of the show, of all these sort of philosophical comments that people are making. And it's supposed to be really inspirational about follow your dreams and fulfill them, and that's kind of what most of these shows are about on Toonami, really. But especially Outlaw Star, and I thought that, you know, there have been, like, various different uploads of it on YouTube and different qualities, and it looks better each time because this new remastering, the show looks really good in HD, mm-hmm. and Bebop, too. They both look great on Toonami now, so, I mean, these are classic shows, and I'm glad to see them again, and I'm just feeling happy that they aired them one last time, or maybe they'll air again. We don't know what's going to happen next week on the schedule.
Yeah. I guess my thing with Outlaw Star is that, like, after it ended, like, I was really looking up, like, what else there was connected to that universe, and there really isn't so much. Like, there's Angel Lynx. That's it. Uh-huh. And, like, the unfinished manga. That's it.
So, yeah, the manga, I guess there's some of it that's been put out that has not been scanlated, but some of it has been. So I read, you know, what was out there on the Batoto, which is now gone, but was one of the big scanlation sites, and it had, I don't know, like 5 chapters or something. But it had Helga, and I don't even know if it made it to the part with Aisha and Suzuka, because they don't really get introduced until, like, maybe a third of the way through the show. You have Helga as, like, the main female character, and then she dies. which is kind of shocking. Even though they tried to edit it when it first aired on Toonami, like, she was destroyed, you know, or something like that.
But everybody knows what happened. She went randomly to a galaxy far, far away, and Jean's got it from here, guys.
Yeah.
Doing that old Robotech Voltron kind of editing where they to kill off a character, quote unquote.
She got very sick when she was out of the spaceship. And
when she got almost deathly ill next to the sun, but it's okay, guys. There was a hospital that's on a sunspot. That's where she's at for the rest of the show. She's perfectly okay.
I gotta tell you, there was an episode of Transformers Energon.
Oh boy.
One of the characters goes into the sun and is burned to a crisp. And then the next episode, they're back. They're like, we saved their spark, and now they're in a new body. Somehow they went into the sun and got their soul and took it out and put it in a new body just so that they can make a new toy of this character. And I was like, wow, this is like the most ridiculous way to introduce a new model of character.
I didn't know the soul could defy the sun like that, but you learn something every day from Transformers.
And that's, I think, probably in the Japanese version too. I assume that is almost as bad as the English version of that
probably
show.
I don't know. I would have believed, like, oh, it's his twin cousin or something. Like, that's more believable. Yeah. Than the soul surviving the heat of the sun to possess another transformable robot.
Yeah, they actually did do that as well. They had one of the characters got killed off, and then later on they had a new model of the character out, and in the show they're just like, oh, it's his brother. And so they do that kind of lazy stuff. And even though Outlaw Star and Cowboy Bebop, they probably are kind of like toy shows. I mean, I assume they're there to sell spaceship models and stuff. But it's still kind of like better than Transformers.
Okay, so I can get into a whole lot of this on Bebop. At least the merchandising for what I know of Bebop, because there's a lot of it out there. But there's hardly nothing for Outlaw Star, except I do know McFarlane Toys. They did like their Japanimation or toy line in the late 90s, early 2000s. And they did one on like Escaflowne, they did one on Tenchi, but they also did the spaceship, the Grappler from Outlaw Star. And I think I saw it like one time at Toys R Us. And that's something I have not seen at any collector show or anywhere in the wild. And I would love to own that. Cause I've got like because they released these Escaflowne figures through McFarlane, which I do have that. Jeez. Oh man, I'll get into McFarlane Toys like in closing remarks for sure, but I would love
I searched on Outlaw Star, and there's a figure of Jean and Malfina and the Grappler ship. Do you think that's what it is?
Let me do a Google search.
I'll post an image. I mean, I'll post a link in the Discord channel.
Okay, here. So you definitely got it on eBay, and I'm sure they're gonna ask. Yep, that's it. $200 on eBay. Outlaw Star figure, Jean Starwin and Melfina. That's it. And they want $200 for it. Sweet bejesus. Yeah, that's the same marquee layout like the Outlaw Star that's with the Escaflowne thing that I've got. And I bet you that sucker's worth money now.
So did Japan not make any toys in this? I thought that they would have made some sort of tie-in.
Not that I know of. I'm sure there's probably like an art book for Outlaw Star and like, I don't know if there's any resin models for it, but yeah, like this is like the period of like, I'm looking at like another screenshot of this. Someone has a loose figure of this for like $247. But McFarlane Toys, like when they made this stuff, like they made it like it's pretty decent quality, I'd say. Like, especially if like the stuff that wants to move. Like, I've always questioned their articulation on their figures. It's very basic, but like, I'm looking at this one with just the ship they have on a stand, and it looks really nice. And it looks like the grapple arms, like the hands spin and they move around just enough. And of course, like Jean and Melfina are just static pose figures. It's the same as the Escaflowne figures, but dang, I would love to own this. But that's the only kind of merchandise I can think of for Outlaw Star. And I'm pretty sure they put this out like when it was on Toonami. And
is there an Outlaw Star Funko Pop yet?
Oh, who knows when that's going to happen?
It will. They have them for Bebop.
They do, but more people remember Bebop than they would Outlaw Star, I think.
I don't know. I mean, how many people were watching Adult Swim in 2001 versus Toonami in 2001? I feel like Toonami was bigger, but Cowboy Bebop has stayed on TV longer, so maybe it has more of an impact.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, people, I think, would recognize Bebop more because of how long it's been on TV, whereas Outlaw Star, it hasn't been on TV in, 15 years? Like, you know, it got off the air in about 2002 or so, like, and that was on the Adult Swim block.
Yeah. One of the things that people always remember who were watching Toonami in 2000 and 2001, 2002, I think this is one of the big shows. Like, people might remember it more than Ronin Warriors or some of the other shows that were on back then.
Yeah.
Or G-Force. I mean, how many people remember G-Force today?
Well, I mean, I had people in high school tell me, like, how cool Outlaw Star was, but, like, at that time, it was probably off the air for, like, a year or so. And yeah. I think the first time someone really tried to heavily promote Outlaw Star to me was an employee at a Blockbuster when we were talking anime, and he brought up Outlaw Star. So that shows how long ago this was. And he made it sound like Gene Starwin was his ultimate badass. Like, he's like, oh, he fights all these guys, and this one guy is like, man, you know, like, this Starwin guy's like a really good, like, fighter or whatever. And it makes it sound like it's the hero's journey for Gene Starwin. Like, you know, like, he put up this character, like, so high, like, yeah, you know, like, he's got all these skills, and he's working and getting better and whatever. And then I see the show, and none of that happens. Like, it's just Gene Starwin's just a womanizing, you know, outlaw, and no one ever questions, like, wow, Starwin's so good, I never expected him to be this badass or whatever. Like, none of that was brought up or promoted the way, like, that guy at the Blockbuster, like, promoted it to me, like, in 2003 or whatever. Because he was talking about how great it was. Like, I don't know what version of Outlaw Star he saw, but that is not the show I just spent the past half year watching on TV.
You don't think Gene was badass enough?
Well, I mean, no, Gene was badass, but, like, I felt like he was, like, the way I understood in my mind was, like, oh, Gene's like this, you know, he improves better with his shooting skills, and people commend him on it. That was how this one guy promoted it to me. But he was just, he's just like naturally that lucky, that good to get out of like any situation in a shootout. And they got, like, based like on what I'm seeing, yeah.
Where he's just kind of like a womanizing guy, like Lupin, just kind of fumbling around and, making his way through perilous situations.
And
kind of greedy, like Lupin.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's after the pirate and the treasure and the women, so.
Yeah. He's not like a virtuous hero or anything.
No, he's definitely more anti-hero, but like, I mean, that kind of works for like his line of business and like what he does. And I mean, he does like, you know, truly love Melfina. I mean, I think he always has, but you know, he's just gotta get over like, you know, oh, I can't treat her like the other women I treat them. So like, cause Melfina's really special, and she is. I mean, she's the freaking key to the Galactic Ley Line. Spoiler alert! But I think people listening to this already know this show, so... You know, oh well.
I would hope they've seen it.
Yeah.
I don't want to spoil it, but at the end of Cowboy Bebop, Spike dies.
I didn't know we were moving on to Bebop already.
No. Or not.
All right.
Unless you don't have any, you have some more stuff to say about Outlaw Star, I assume.
My thing is, like, I think the only thing I wanted to say on Outlaw Star was, like, there's just a whole lot of potential to expand the universe. They introduced, like, you know, these, like, aliens called the Katao Katao. They have a freaking, like, female wrestling championship or whatever in that one episode. So,
where
like.
Is dressed up like a masked wrestler, that one?
Yeah, that was a fun episode. And.
A lot of them are just fun one-shots like that.
Yeah, there's a lot of fun one-shots, but there's, like, a lot there to you can just expand on if, like, you know, there's more to put into the show. And, you know, especially, like, the Katao Katao, like, I would have liked to know more about them, or, like, if they had, like, an offshoot series, like, that would be interesting, because I felt like, you know, like, oh, does Aisha, like, finally go back to her people, or she just stay on the Outlaw Star and just say, oh, forget him, I'm not, like, this ambassador or whatever. So,
it seemed like she was going to go with them, and then she chose to go with the Outlaw Star.
Yeah.
So
well, here, okay.
For a potential sequel.
Okay, so here's one thing. So they brought up the subplot with the McDougal brothers, and they kind of like led to like it was going somewhere at the end, and then the last
episode. Well, it led to one of them being killed, and then he came back as a robot or something. Weird.
Well, no, like, now they're both, like, okay, so one is, like, halfway alive by the end of the show, and then there's the brother is, he's already dead, but he's got his subconscious in the ship that they have. So they escape that way, and they're like, we're gonna get you next time, Gene Starwin, but, like, you can't get him next time, and there's nothing else to add to the show. Like, that's like a pretty serious, like, plot, you know, opening plot there. Or plot point that
they
could definitely be explored.
Yeah,
that's
back,
yeah. Like, if they're gonna do like a movie or like something to tie that in, like that's something that's somewhere to start. Like, for him fighting the McDougal brothers again, or like maybe allying with them, I don't know. But like, that's such an open. That was just like such an open ended like plot point. I was like, wait, there's no way that can be over. Like, that's just how it left it. I was like, really? Like, that was essential to Gene's like history about him. Is because of the McDougal brothers, like, how he was afraid of space and, like, how he killed, how they killed his dad. And they just kind of, I understand leaving that open, like, if, you know, if they're going to continue it. That's why I was, like, looking up, like, if it's like, oh, there's got to be more side manga, or, like, there's probably about 500 fan, or maybe, not 500, excuse me, like, about 100 fan fictions out there, probably tying up that loose plot point with the McDougals and Gene Starwin. And I bet you 90% of it is, gay yaoi hentai. So,
probably,
yeah, sadly, but that is the truth.
But yeah, I think that Josh said that they were planning to make a sequel, but it didn't ever end up happening. I mean, maybe it'll happen now. You know, they're making a sequel to Fooly Cooly. It's been on, they could easily just commission like another season of Outlaw Star, or I think that they could even do a prequel to Bebop, you know, about what happened with Spike before the show started.
That would be interesting too. Like how we got the Swordfish 2 and how we joined up with, like the reasons behind joining up with the Jet. I mean, I don't know. Maybe the McDougals are like in the, Angel Link show or something. I mean, who knows?
I don't know.
You really
want
a prequel to Cowboy Bebop though? Like, that probably would end poorly.
I don't know. It could happen.
Oh, like, great. But, you found your mic.
Plastic untouched. Poured to my mic.
Well, Space Dandy turned out pretty well, but then we had stuff like that that anime about terrorism that we
Aaron
watched. I forget what it was called.
Shit.
Yeah, that thing. That was terrible.
I've heard some people say it was crap and other people say it was good.
It is very mixed views.
I think it was generally popular, but Daft and I didn't like it.
Alright.
Come on now.
So, Daft, do you have anything to add for Outlaw Star?
Watched the first 5 episodes about 10 years ago and did not like it. I planned on watching it when the Blu-rays came out, and then Blu-rays came out and I didn't watch it.
See, I think about 10 years ago, I got about 4 episodes in, and then I just didn't feel like continuing it. But since it was on TV, I was like, well, I mean, it's there. I might as well finish it out.
Yeah, it's been on my list. It's not been on my backlog, but there are a lot of things that are on my backlog.
Oh, I have that same backlog too, so.
I watched it in like 2006 or so on YouTube, and I assume that it's gone from there now, but it was when they still allowed like half-hour videos before they started imposing the 10-minute rule, which I think they got rid of since then. But I mean, it was really early on, and I assume they've been copyright struck down, but yeah, I saw it in middle school and I really liked it at the time, but I haven't seen it since, so it was nice to see it again on TV and HD.
That's pretty cool that DeMarco picked it up. It is one of those iconic shows. And that aired on Adult Swim or Toonami back in the day, right?
Yeah, I said it aired in early 2001 on Toonami, and then it was on Adult Swim in early 2002.
Slightly concerned because I liked the trailer for the new Fooly Cooly, and I feel like...
Did you expect to hate it?
I think it's unnecessary to make, but as soon as the Pillows music started hitting in on the trailer, I was just instantly sold. And like, honestly, the trailer was
real. Have you read any of the Watchmen prequel comic? Speak of unnecessary.
Frank bought me the first issue, before Watchmen or Doomsday?
Yeah, I meant to say the sequel, but then I said the prequel on accident because there are both, but I don't know if you've read either.
My friend got me the first issue of Doomsday, but I haven't read it. I can only imagine it's pure shit.
Yeah, they're trying to merge the DC universe with the Watchmen universe. They have like Superman and Batman showing up in there, and then like there's like a Black Rorschach now, and all these other.
dumb.
Hey, since we're off topic already, great. Good job. All right. I have a question for you, Daft. Do you think the Pillows are going to write new music for the new Fooly Cooly? Or are they going to keep the same tracks?
I mean, they were confirmed to, I think. I mean, the Pillows has, like, a ridiculous discography. Like, they put an album out literally every other year, if not every year.
Oh, that I did not know that their discography was that huge.
Some of their later albums are really good, too. Like, the music's on par with, like, the albums that they took for Fooly Cooly. Because, like, the music they did for Fooly Cooly is, like, on three different of their albums.
I know it's spread out, but, like, when I went to Japan, like, I got my brother, like, their album that most of the music is on Fooly Cooly, if not every single track. And I bought that for him.
Yeah.
Because I know he appreciated it.
I can send you some of that. I'll send you some of the better cuts from there that weren't on the show.
Okay. Well, you can just send it to me later or whatever.
But yeah, no, that was the only reason why I had any hope for this show in the first place, because he did announce that the Pillows were involved.
Okay, I was hoping they would be. I mean, I may not like everything about Fooly Cooly, and there was a point where I didn't really like. I had friends, like, I thought it was like a just a fun show to watch. And the crowd of people I was friends with at the time when it was airing on Adult Swim, they, like, instantly hated it. And one of them that I don't even talk to now, it was like, you know, there's a guy in my school that he told me, like, Fooly Cooly, and I just refused to talk to him. And so I was just like, I didn't think the show was that bad, but okay. But I had two of my good friends, like, completely hate Fooly Cooly. So I had this mindset that I was like, well, maybe I should hate Fooly Cooly. And now that I think about it, like, no, the show, I mean, like, I don't like everything about the show, but there's things about it I really do like. And I'm not afraid to admit that now. But and then now I'm kind of like, well, this show's going to do whatever it wants to, and that's the fun part.
It was almost like Invader Zim or something, where the fans were so obnoxious that you don't want to be associated with the show.
I don't know if it was really a fan-based thing or just, like, on taste. I mean, I had, like, friends that had conflicting taste with, like, other people, and for them, it's like you have people that absolutely love Fooly Cooly, like my brother and a few people I know, or people that just absolutely hate that show. And I'm kind of like on the middle on Fooly Cooly.
That's most people, too. Either you really love it or you really hate it. To me, like, Fooly Cooly is like the Catcher in the Rye of anime, where, like, you really only appreciate Catcher in the Rye if you're, like, 14 and you have, like, severe teen angst. And that's kind of like, because it's about growing up. And that's, I loved Catcher in the Rye when I read it when I was 14. And I liked Fooly Cooly when I watched it when I was 14, because it's about growing up.
Yeah. Well, Evangelion, I would say, is the Catcher in the Rye, because it's also about growing up, but how not to grow up.
Evangelion is like, I'm trying to think of like a book comparison for something that's just like, so fucking, that is complete nonsense, but is extremely entertaining. I don't have a good book comparison.
The first thing that hit my mind was Soylent Green. I think that was off of a book. But, I don't know. I don't think that's a good
thing. I'm back on an earlier point, Zionic. So if your friends jumped off a bridge, you would too?
No, not them. Well, I don't even talk to those guys anymore. So one of them, we've just kind of lost connection. So it's just like, all right, fine. I won't be judged for saying that I like Fooly Cooly, because like, it's been over a decade since I talked to you guys. So piss off.
You got disowned by your friend for liking Fooly Cooly?
Well, not officially. I don't know. It's hard to say that when you haven't talked to him in a long time. It's interesting that the people that didn't like Fooly Cooly I was friends with, I no longer associate myself with. So maybe there's something to say about that.
I didn't even think of you as being that vocally an advocate of Fooly Cooly, because I thought in the past you said, I'm not that big of a fan or something.
I've grown to, like, when I think about these shows, like Fooly Cooly, I'm kind of like, you know, I can grow to appreciate it, because, like, I mean, my brother has it all on DVDs, and, you know, I've seen it, and I don't know, I just feel like if I watch it, I just feel like I don't take anything out of it, but it's just something, like, just fun to watch, and just to, like, mellow out to, maybe smoke pot. And
right,
get drunk
it's
too.
Just,
I mean,
like an Adult Swim comedy from
yeah,
the
yeah.
era.
It's perfect.
Just like an entertaining episode of Space Ghost from 2003 or something.
I think I get more out of Space Ghost than I do Fooly Cooly in terms of simulating my mind with some sort of intelligence. But visually speaking, well, I love how Fooly Cooly looks in some areas. So
I'm thinking of that like episode of Space Ghost where they just smoke pot and get drunk the whole episode, and Space Ghost is like flying around. Just smashing into stuff. That's kind of like what Fooly Cooly is.
I need to watch that episode of Space Ghost. So, all right. Do we have any? I don't think we got anything else to say on Outlaw Star. I've kind of said what I wanted to say about it. I mean, and I think the people listening already know what the show is about. But it's just kind of giving our first impression, or at least my first impressive thoughts about it.
Yeah, I really like the opening and the endings. Malfina has a great voice, and
I like this was a. Outlaw Star was a pioneer dub, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they had the voice actors for Malfina sing her song, and it was in English. And the one thing I really like about pioneer dubs is the fact when they have their voice actors as they cast, when they have to sing the image songs or the character songs, they're really good. Like, I mean, they're not the best, but they're, like, pretty good for that time. And even now, like, I can really appreciate them.
Yeah. I think they, in the Toonami opening for the last few episodes, they had a clip of Malfina singing.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it goes right into the opening, before the opening, the cold open or whatever you call it,
uh-huh.
Where there's some guy talking about some aspect of the Outlaw Star universe, which I think was
the voice actor Bo Billingsley.
Yeah, and he just talks about, like, what a bounty hunter is or something like that.
What are dreams?
Yeah, or that.
Dreams are in the space. I voice Jet on Cowboy Bebop.
It is funny to hear him and two shows back-to-back like that.
Yeah.
and then narrating the bumpers in between, you have spikes. So, I mean,
it's... So, you would call it the Bo Billingsley Power Hour on Toonami?
Yeah.
That's what I would call
it. Have you announced the replacements yet for Bebop, or is that still TBD?
We don't know what replaces Bebop or Outlaw Star, and they're both done now. So there's an hour airing next week that we don't know what it is. Well, I mean, it's going to be April Fool's, so maybe they won't air any of the normal shows.
It's April Fool's this week. That's
yeah,
right.
So what do we think Konami's going to do? Adult Swim's going to do for April Fool's?
The consensus seems to be that it's going to be Meguzi, but would it be too obvious, as they say? I mean, what can they do that would be better than that, though?
Using this thing called Adult Swim Junior on their bumpers, and there hasn't been explicit explanation for what that is. Like, the Adult Swim subreddit thinks that might be what they call Cartoon Network. I don't know. They've teased it, and nothing's come official of it. So I'm wondering if that's what they're gonna do for April Fools. That might be a little bit too on the nose if they're teasing it beforehand, though.
Adult Swim Junior, like, air some preschool shows online instead or something.
Just aired C-Lab 2021 with the high pitched voices.
Bring back the farting that they did during Ghost of Michelle and Full Metal Alchemist, and do that.
What has it been like 10 years since they've done that or something?
Probably 15.
Jeez.
I'm hoping if it isn't Meguzi, I'm still not sure if it's going to be Meguzi since the bumpers aren't in HD and it's 2018 and airing pretty on a 4K TV, I assume. But if they don't do that, I just want a 6-hour marathon of Hantaro.
Before that.
I was going to say, John, I'm like, John's going to freaking like, John, that's up your alley. And you just took the words out of your mouth. You're like, yeah, I'll be up for that. You said it so low. So much shame in you liking Hamtaro.
Oh, Hamtaro's what got me into Toonami.
I think a lot of people probably are that way.
I think a lot of people are going to appreciate a Hamtaro in HD marathon for April Fools. You're not the only one, John. Game.
My friend owns every Hamtaro game. Like, some of those are really expensive, and she's collected them all.
Oh, I'm sure they are now because of the collectibles, but they made, like, what, two or three? I know there was one on the Game Boy Advance.
I think. There was quite a few, I think, at least in Japan.
I thought you were talking about the ones in America. I knew there was, like, one in America, if that, for the Game Boy Advance.
I think they might have, like, Game Boy Color, Game Boy Advance, DS. I think they went on for a while.
I don't know about the DS so much, but you're probably right.
What's if there's 10?
Yeah, you just look on Google Shopping. The top one is a Game Boy Advance, Hamtaro Ham Games. And I think they aired like an episode of that on, like, some episode of the show based on that on the Saturday Block Party Cartoon Network, or maybe on Toonami.
At least these games on the DS in America in 2008.
Yeah, and then Hi Hamtaro Challenge for DS, and then Hamtaro's Unite for Game Boy Color. So the show was only on for like 2 years, but somehow it managed to have games over three different generations of handhelds.
I wonder who localized it. That's fucking the one in 2008. That's so weird.
I love how we go from talking about Galactic Outlaws to damn hamsters, all within 5 freaking minutes.
That's how Toonami is.
That's how this podcast is.
They would air a show like Hamtaro, and then they would air Tenchi, and then they would air Outlaws.
So yeah, they had to build it up from like the fun kid stuff to like, we're going to get really serious with Gundam and you know, Outlaw Star or whatever.
Yeah.
They were forced to run Hamtaro like they were Woo and Warriors, so I'm inclined to assume they won't actually run that, but for April Fool's, but I still like the idea.
You guys ready to talk about Outlaw Star? Or no. Sure. Okay. Let's talk about Outlaw Star again. No. Are we ready to talk about Cowboy Bebop?
Oh, I wanted to say one more thing about Outlaw Star.
All right.
All these edits when it first aired, you know, obviously it's airing uncut this time, but there was like one edit, which was the Hot Spring episode. There was just a little bit of editing of nudity.
Well, like you mentioned about like blurry nipples, and like I really couldn't tell.
Right.
I was like, man, Aisha's got some really smooth breasts.
Yeah, sometimes it's animated like that these days. I like the Berserk anime, the CGI one.
Yeah.
They just don't animate it fully because they know that some markets would censor it. And they can't get it on TV.
I would have loved if they went back to digital bikinis, but, you know, that's just me. But
Yeah, it would have been funny to see those on there.
Maybe
they should do that, like all of their episodes that they have that they would have to censor. Just have, like, all the various Hot Things episodes of
Oh, for April Fools? Nice.
Soul Eater, yeah. Just, like, all the shows that they've aired over the last few years where they had to do pixelation and just do digital bikinis.
Yeah, well, you got that Hot Springs episode and, yeah, GXP, but the censorship was so obvious, like, how pixelated. I feel like the pixels took up half the damn TV.
Yeah, it was hilarious.
I was like, I can't see the other form of Ryoko's shape, damn it, or a girl that's not Ryoko but is, or Ayaka or whatever, non-Ayaka. I don't even remember most of that show.
Yeah, I don't remember what the names of the girls were.
Yeah.
And GXP. But here's a comparison of what it looked like. I posted on the chat.
Yeah, I see it.
They added on a digital bikini to Melfina whenever she was on the ship.
Well, it looks like... I mean, it looks like a black digital bra and like those like
sweatpants,
those legging cutoff leggings or whatever. But I mean, that does work. So,
I mean, they had to do what they had to do, even though they never show Melfina's nipples in the show, but they still couldn't air it like that in 2001 on the show.
No, not in the afternoon.
And with Cowboy Bebop, they also had to do. There was one episode where they had to censor nipples.
Well,
but only just one episode of each had edits, whereas in 2001 when these aired, they were very heavily edited, even.
Yeah, Bebop was late at night, too. Like, I can definitely call out the edits, too, that I know off of the original airing, because I have those on tape.
With Cowboy Bebop, at least had a TV-14 edit. I mean, Outlaw Star, even though it aired on Adult Swim, they were airing it TVY7FV, so it was the same version that was on Toonami.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like Gundam or Bebop where they aired a more uncut version late at night. You know, it just aired on a block that had a parental advisory notice with a ton of edits, which is the same way that they aired Tenchi, and I think Pilot Candidate was edited for Toonami too, even though it never aired on there.
I never finished that show except one episode, so I wouldn't know.
And BQ said that 0082, which. Maybe that's true. I think they edited a lot out of it, I assume.
Wait, for
0083... the posters on the mag.
Yeah, for 0083, there was a scene of... they took out, like, a shower scene with Nina or whatever in one episode. So they just cut that whole scene out.
Yeah, it seemed like the only show they had that was not very heavily edited was Yu Yu Hakusho, because it had all the language that was not really used before that.
Yeah, I really liked Yu Yu when it was on Adult Swim, because it was, like, free-flowing swearing. And, like, and then once I got on Toonami, I was like, this isn't as fun. Yusuke's not cussing like a mother effing sailor.
Yeah, there was one time when I missed an episode, and then I like rented the DVD, and I was like, wow. And this was when it was on at like 5 in the morning or something on Cartoon Network,
yeah,
on Friday nights. So there was really no reason for it to be heavily edited, but they were still editing out the swearing. So when I heard the swearing on the uncut DVD, I was like, wow, they really have to edit this a lot to air it on TV.
Yeah.
In the middle of the night at that point. Because that was before Adult Swim had taken Friday nights, and they just had like edited anime on at night.
Yeah. All right.
They would never do something like that now, of course.
Oh no, of course not. So do we want to get into Cowboy Bebop now officially?
Yeah, sure.
All right. So I can just cue up the intro and.
I think it's time to blow this thing. Get everybody in the stuff together. Okay, 3, 2, 1, let's jam.
You're gonna play the opening from
yeah,
Bebop.
Yeah, I was gonna play the opening and then like wipes the trumpet. Like I don't know if you remember that episode of Metalocalypse when I think it was Toki was trying. They were trying to do instrument sounds with their mouths, and Toki's like, "I'm the trumpet too." That's like the that was like the, I was thinking about like the in the intro earlier today, and I just and then I immediately remember that scene from Metalocalypse. So Swisscar plays us out, queuing that up.
Thank you, Brieg or Newton, but I can totally make my voice sound like a trumpet.
Bullshit!
Check this out.
Holy f- Hey, that's pretty good trumpet play.
I'm the trumpet! I am the trumpet!
All right, so Cowboy Bebop, I can say so much about that show. And depending on when this episode comes out, which it should be next week or beginning of April, it would really mark like 20 years since Bebop first aired on TV. Yeah, it's been that, or at least in TV in Japan, but like for American TV, it was like August or September of 2001 when it started airing.
Yeah, they started airing it immediately before 9/11, and like Mobile Suit Gundam, they got pulled off the air right away after 9/11 because they thought it was too violent or...
Right.
You know, there are episodes where skyscrapers are exploding, like the Teddy Bomber episode, which I think probably was skipped the first time that they aired through the show, even though it's one of the later episodes, so they had... You know, 6 months or something that had passed since 9/11, but they still thought it was too soon, and it didn't air until probably a year after 9/11.
I think, like, I remember taping the Teddy Bomber episode, like, probably a year after it originally aired on TV, I think. But I know, like, the episode they cut out specifically when 9/11 happened was Waltz for Venus because it had a plane hijacking. But when they did the second run, which is what I taped, they aired that episode. And that was like by end of December. That was like the end of the year, if not early 2002, when they had that on there. So yeah, like I've been a fan of Bebop for a very, very long time, and I mean I've got like I mean like I recently the site that I've been recording or archiving stuff off my tapes. Like, I put up, like, those original, like, second airings or first airings of Bebop, like, way back in 2001, 2002. And, yeah, there's been, like, I can think of, like, a lot of merchandise for Bebop. I have some of it in my collection. Like, we even got some, like, manga in America from Tokyo Pop of Bebop. I got a whole collection of these. What Tokyo Pop did was they had these anime guides, which were like small little booklets that like contained information of like the first like handful of episodes, and I got all six of those. And they're basically kind of like mini B clubs in a way, where it's basically like information about like the episode and screenshots of it. And then in the back they have like concept art. And I think I got those in my storage, I believe. Yeah, I do. I got all six of them because I collected some of them and my brother collected some of them. And then I wound up coming across them when we're cleaning out our storage garage like a year ago. So I just wound up taking all of them together. So they're with me now. And like that's some of the early merchandise I remember Bebop I could find in America. I've got like an action figure or basically a figure. I think it's by Bandai that's worth money now. But I got it for like relatively kind of cheap, like an Animazement, like about 10 years ago. I've got a Swordfish 2 model kit by Bandai, which that sucker's worth, that's very collectible right now. It's been built, of course, but if it's unbuilt, it'd be worth like a ton of money. I still haven't convinced myself to get the Blu-ray, collection of Bebop, because I've got the old, Bandai, Bebop Remix DVD collection. And to me, that's kind of like all I really need.
Well, collector's edition for the Blu-ray.
I don't have the Blu-ray yet.
Yeah, going out with
like Outlaw Star or Cowboy Bebop. But I mean, the remastering looks so good on TV. But at the same time, I don't feel like I'm going to need to see it again right away after I've just seen it. So.
Yeah, like Bebop for me, like I can go I can go through it for like many years before I need to see it again because I feel like I've seen it so much. And
who do not like Cowboy Bebop? They disgust me.
There are some out there that do not like Cowboy Bebop, and I want nothing to do with those people.
Yeah, I know some people complain that it doesn't have a strong enough central plot tying everything together, but not everything has to be that way.
Mm-mm. Least favorite episodes are the two-parters. I like the like episodic stuff so much more.
Yeah, there's a lot of. Like, the fans that like the show, they really give a lot of praise to the two-parter episodes. And to me, they're kind of like the ones I don't like the most. Or, I mean, I like them, but it's like, they're definitely not my favorite. They're far from my favorite. Honestly, like, the one everyone talks about, or at least they used to, was episode 5, Ballad of Fallen Angels, when Spike fights Vicious. And everyone, like, always praised that episode of being, like, the best one on the series. And I was like, no way. Like, there's no way that, like, there, and I can think of, like, five other episodes that are better than Waltz for, not Waltz for Venus, but, Ballad of Fallen Angels.
Well, it is the first time he fights the main villain. That's usually considered to be the best episode by a lot of people.
Yeah, it is, but, like, Vicious, Vicious isn't
that sucks.
But Vicious isn't, like, a main villain, though. Like, I mean, he is,
he's
but, like,
as close
he showed.
As
he what?
He's as close as there is to one. There's nobody else who's a recurring villain like him.
Yeah, it's just regarding, like, Spike's past, really. And that's how you discover more of Spike's story if Vicious is in it. But and then, so that's, like, the only interesting thing that really Vicious can bring is the fact that it magnifies, like, more about Spike. But, like, there's a lot of the standalone episodes where it's, like... I mean, I'll tell you, like, the first episode that got me into Bebop when I was meant to tape Gundam 0080 when I was on... Toonami Midnight Run. I wound up taping the Pierrot LeFou episode 20 with the big fat guy. And I had no idea what I was watching. And I was like, this looks awesome. I don't know what this is. And I remember talking to my friends at school about it. And they're like, oh yeah, it's Cowboy Bebop. It's a really cool show. And I was like, is there more?
Yeah, because the weird thing was they had, Cartoon Network had Toonami on at midnight. Monday through Wednesday and Friday or something like that.
Yeah, it was something weird.
And then they would have late night on weekdays?
Yeah, the midnight run on weekdays for a couple of years.
Yeah.
It was only Friday. It was Friday, wow.
But then they had you know, then they had Adult Swim do the encore on Thursday of this of the Sunday night block. So
yeah, and I didn't
randomly
even
get Adult Swim shows airing during a tsunami time. One random night a week on weekdays.
Yeah, that's what kind of threw me off. So really, I have Toonami to thank to get me into the Cowboy Bebop, and Gundam to thank to get me into Cowboy Bebop, because if I wasn't interested in 0080, I would have never saw Pierre LeFou as my first episode. And, like, that is the episode I love to show people, like, oh, what's Bebop about? Well, let me tell you something. And then start off with Pierre LeFou. And they're like, why does Santa Claus have a full arsenal of guns in his coat? And why is he not taking bullets? And why is he smiling? And why do cats freak him out? And I'm like, yeah, this is the greatness of Cowboy Bebop. Well, at least, like, I feel like that episode is, like, the high point of that series.
So I watched that upload that you did, and for some reason, the rest of the episode.
Yeah, I tried taping it again later, and my tape ran out. So I never had a successful recording of that episode, but I mean, I own the series now, and after that aired, I remember getting, like, the DVD that specifically had that episode on it, when they had the singles out, like, the Sessions, they called it Sessions. This was before the Remix DVDs came out, and I found that DVD at, like, a used, like, music DVD store, like, Massachusetts or whatever. I went to go see a friend back in high school, and I think I paid, like, $10 for it or something. I was like, oh my gosh, this is, like, my favorite episode of Bebop, and heck yeah, I'm paying $10 for it, and I still have that DVD to this day. But no, like, once I had that, I was like, well, I don't really need to have a reason to try to hunt down the episode again, because, like, I can watch it anytime I want to on DVD, so. Yeah, I mean, but Bebop hasn't had so much impact, like, especially, like, an anime fandom. And some of the stories I've heard, like, if you go to, like, New Orleans, like, there's jazz bands, places you go to, where they'll play the theme song to Bebop, they'll play Tank. And that to me is, like, just crazy that you can walk down, like, New Orleans and then have, like, you know, walk by, like, a jazz place or whatever and have, like, Bebop music playing. Because, like, the jazz soundtrack is so solid. I mean, even if for people that don't like jazz, like, they'll find something out of that soundtrack to really like.
Right? Yeah, it has a great soundtrack.
Yeah, I think maybe, like, it had people, like, get into, like, jazz or whatever. I mean, like, I can understand that. And, like, I've gone, like,
I bet a lot of people would never even heard of the term bebop if not for the show.
That's true, yeah, because, like, even in, like, the I guess, like, the middle credits or, like, the splash screens, like, they'll have, like, words in the images about, like, oh, this is a music revolution of the 1920s. Like, if you, like, pause the scene and try to read, like, the graffiti art on that, on those splash images or whatever, like, you can kind of, like, get a feeling, like, oh, this is an actual music genre, like, you know, this isn't some made-up word about, you know, the fit for an anime title. This isn't a Gundam term or whatever. This is an actual real, like, music, you know, genre within jazz. And so then you add it to an anime, which is basically about space and whatnot. And bounty hunters and finding about your past and grown-up stuff.
Yeah, the opening theme is great. And, you know, the way they... The images... very stylish silhouettes and everything, and all the colors, and it goes perfectly with the music. And, you know, I think probably the most iconic anime opening that there is, really.
I have to agree with that too. I mean, it's definitely like, because everything was like at the 90s for anime was like all pop music or J-pop or whatever, like be super hyper and, you know, have like this pop beat go with everything. And then you have like, you know, this anime about like with jazz music in it. Like, oh, that's different.
I know that Japan really likes jazz, which surprises me that it didn't do better, you know? The show didn't do better when it first aired in Japan, considering how much, you know, there's like jazz musicians from America that can't get onto a record label here but continue to release stuff in Japan because the genre is almost more popular there than it is here.
Yeah, I think...
It's considered to be sort of like an antiquated genre by a lot of people.
Yeah, I think funk music is still a really big thing in Japan, too. Like, I like listening to, like, 80s, like, Japanese funk music. It's some cool stuff. And they know how to make some good funk tracks. So, like, how did you first watch Bebop, John, and Daft? Well, John first.
Well, I watched it on VHS tapes that I rented that were subtitled.
Okay.
So I saw the sub version before the dub, but the dub is great too. I mean, it's very, very much associate the voices in the dub with the characters. I haven't seen the sub version in a long time, but it's very good as well. I mean, the original version and everything, and the voice acting is just great in the show and in both versions. And I really liked it when I first saw it, and then seeing it again with the dub, I think it almost adds another level because you can sort of get more out of the emotion. You hear it in your native language. I think you can tell which words are being emphasized more when people are acting. You know, a lot of people prefer the Japanese version because it's the original version, and you know, that's fine. But I do think that you can tell things apart better when it's in your own native language on the nuances of a performance.
I've always heard that the dub for this, like the voice actors, like Steve Bloom, Wendy Lee is the one who plays Faye. Not Amanda Winley. Yeah, Wendy Lee. And then Bo Billingsley. They would be like all in the same. Like when they had to do like conversations with each other, they all be in the same booth together. So like the conversation in the dub just felt like more connected, more real, instead of just isolated. Like them just blindly reading lines. That's what I heard about like when they were doing the dubbing for the show, which works so well. In terms of this, like the last time I saw Bebop subtitle was either like episodes I downloaded it from like Kazaa or file sharing site in the early 2000s, and the Cowboy Bebop movie when somebody in high school had it. I can't remember how I got a hold of my copy. Either I had someone give it to me or I bought it from them, which was just like on a blank dated CD, and I still have that. So that was really like the last time I can think of me watching the show subtitled. But every time I when I want to watch it, it's always dubbed.
Yeah.
Oh, I was talking about Bebop merchandise earlier. So recently, they made a Cowboy Bebop card game, a collectible card game, which is based off of like some fighting system or whatever. And I picked that card game up at this collectible shop where that crappy sci-fi expo con was at in the mall. And they have like play mats that you can use, but on the flip side of those play mats are basically like really high quality like Bebop posters. So I really want to take I want to get a frame for those and put them in there. I just got to get the measurements for them because they look really good. And I'm thinking about probably giving one to my brother if he wants it. So that's like another piece of Bebop merchandise that they're putting out now. Like they keep putting out Bebop stuff. Like it may not be a whole lot, but they do put out some good stuff here and there. I kind of really wish Bandai would release those, like do a line of model kits for Bebop again, or maybe do a re-release for the Red Tail.
Yeah, it is still popular, so I mean, it's not surprising they still make stuff for it.
I know the Swordfish model kit is done by Bandai, but then when they did the Hammerhead and the Red Tail, it was done by like another modeling company, and so like if you've happened to get that, it's going to be at a pretty high price because they don't. It's so long out of print. And I remember I wanted the Red Tail, but I never got around to it.
Well, wasn't there some con where one of the people who worked on Bebop was talking and they're saying like how important the sales of the model kits were to the show and how do they study children's shows before they made it to know how to market things to people best and everything like that.
Yeah, so that was Watanabe at Animazement a couple years ago. I think that might have been his last main con appearance in America. And I was at his panel there. And so the story on that is that Bebop was originally like funded by Bandai, the toy division. So when they're making the show, they wanted you got to have all these ship designs so we can start selling models for this thing. And so, like, what I understand, according to Watanabe, was, like, the first four episodes have a lot of unique, like, models for ships. So, like, within those first four episodes, and then, like, the rest of the series, they don't really focus in on it so much, even though they still had a lot of really interesting ship designs still. So then after episode four, they cut the funding from it. So then Watanabe was like, well, great, who's gonna fund the rest of the show? So then Sunrise was able to pick it up, so then that's how they got the rest of their funding to make the rest of it. So then it was more, like, character-based. Which is probably why, like, when they got to episode 5, that's why I went straight to, like, Spike's background on his backstory or whatever. And there were still some really, like, cool ship designs. Like, you got Vicious's, like, flying ship. You got the Syndicate spaceship or whatever they have. And it's just a lot of, like, just a lot of really cool stuff, like, around the universe of Bebop. And, like, making a comparison between Bebop and Outlaw Star, like, Outlaw Star is more, like, this is, like, my, you know, my complaint with Outlaw Star when I said it just a little while ago was, like, you know, there's a lot, they introduce a lot of this new, this stuff in there, but they never expand on it. And it just seems like it's, you know, it's all about, like, you know, people in this galaxy and this galaxy, whereas everything in Bebop is within this solar system, so everything's really condensed. And I feel I feel like the show really covers, like, the cultures, the environments very well, which is basically, like, you take any kind of random city from a country, and you just stick them on, like, in a planet, and it's, they operate the exact same way. Like, you know, the first episode is, you know, taking place at in a Mexican, like, asteroid called Tijuana, which is, like, a mimicking of Tijuana, Mexico. And you get there, and the art style is, like, the backgrounds and, you know, the design of, like, the city is based, like, on a South American town. Like, someplace like a you know, a shithole like Tijuana. and I've heard it as Tijuana is a shithole, so I'm not misquoting that at all.
You heard that from the first
time. I've heard it from other people too that have gone missionary work in Tijuana, but they would say, like, oh, it's awful there. It's like there's nothing that great about Tijuana. And, like, I've been to Ecuador, like, you know, missions trips when I was a kid, so, like, there's a lot of, like, you know, slum areas, and then there's a lot of, like, where the rich people live. And, you know, you go to another planet and you set up your, like, South American little city or whatever, and it's just the exact same culture as it is today, which is really interesting.
Let Viku hear you say this. He's going to be offended.
Oh, whatever.
Bashing Tijuana. That's his home turf.
A home turf he's got to cross the border to get to. But
well, how different is San Diego from Tijuana? I mean, if they're that similar when they go to a different planet, you know, if they move 50 feet across the imaginary border, is it really all that much better?
I mean, probably not. I mean, but there's just a whole lot of, like, detail to, like, just, like, where people, you know, live. Like, they have, like, these really exotic places. Like, you've got, like, that one episode of, like, where they go to, like, that moon on Jupiter where it's about, like, you know, Jet's, like, ex-girlfriend or whatever. And it seems like it's very Italian because it's got waterways and stuff. And then, you know, you got a desert area, which is, like, on this, like, moon called Titan around Jupiter, which there's a war fought there. And then Jupiter Jazz looks very, very, like, communist and, like, a socialist, like, planet where everything's all grungy and dingy. There's no color texture. It's just very plain and desolate. Kind of like North Korea or whatever. So it just seems like this very desolate place, but, like, you go to, like, you know, like a Cold War era city, you get the exact same thing because there's no texture to it whatsoever other than just, like, the gray, colorless texture of a building. And then, like, Mars seems to be, like, the most, like, cultural, like, in terms of, like, oh, we have, like, a Chinatown on this, like, you know, this little city on Mars, on this part of Mars, and we have, like, you know, an Indian area, we have, like, a marketplace, we have a bazaar. And it just feels like, you know, the show, like, visually speaks all that without it actually having to tell you something. Like, this is the universe. It's no different than where you live now. It just happened to be in space on Mars because you move a culture up there. They're just going to keep things the way they've been doing it for hundreds of thousands of years, which is really interesting. So that's kind of what I really like about Bebop. It's like, you know, they go to these different areas and it's just kind of like you taking a plane and flying over somewhere else, like in the world. Except, like, you know, you're going to an
episodic show. Is you get to see these little snippets of different. It's a really great way to world build.
Yeah, it's a great world build.
They're still on Earth, and they go to it at one point when they're going to, like, a museum to look for a Betamax deck and.
Yeah, well, they've been to Earth 3 times as far as I know. There's the one episode where Spike gets his ship overhauled, and that's the Wild Horses episode. And then they got the one where they're searching for the Betamax player because yeah. That's related to a Faye's backstory. And then
Spike kicked the other one.
Well, no, I think there's 4 actually, but then there's the other one where, like, they meet Ed's dad, and then there's the other one, like, in the early episodes when they go there. And that's when they get Ed because Ed's shooting lasers at Spike or whatever around the asteroid field around the Earth. So that's the 4 that I can think of.
Jet is with that girl that is like the daughter of his friend or something.
Oh, that's the one with like, she's like a, oh man. She's like a tarot reader or whatever. Yeah, that was like one of the, I didn't particularly like that episode. Like, I've seen it once.
It's kind of weird how they keep making jokes about how she's going to be Jet's girlfriend or something when there's such an age difference between them.
Yeah, she's definitely a teenager, but, like, according to the show, like, Jet's in his mid-30s. So there's, like, a...
He looks so old.
Yeah, he looks, like, older than really is. Unless, like, in Japan, when you get to 35 as a guy, you just look like you're 50 and you look like hell. Yeah, I guess the girl's, like, probably in her mid or late teens or whatever, so there's, like, a bit, like, there's about a 20-year age difference between the two. Crap, there's, alright, there's so much more, there's something else I wanted to say. Oh, so, the show plays on, like, a lot of, like, they have, like, they have, like, the villains are kind of, like, really cheesy, like, you got the one that's, like, these environmentalist terrorists or whatever, that they're trying to destroy, like, the space gates or something. And then you got like
the sea lions or whatever.
Yeah, it was like one of the early episodes, I think. Like they had that. I haven't seen that one in a long time. And then they got like some of the bounty hunters. Like you have like the episode where there was the VT, the space truck driver, and then Spike Wells and like these three like Latino dudes like in giant sombreros and ponchos, because that's like their bounty hunting group. And in the dub, they have like somebody like try to like hash up like a Latino accent or something, like, oh, we gonna cut you, SA, and
is that a Heavy Metal Queen?
Yeah, Heavy Metal Queen, that was it. The biggest thing for Bebop,
that shows how they've got like all these different types of music in here, you know, that character is all about heavy metal.
Yeah,
then there's the jazz music and all these different styles.
And in the Cowboy Bebop movie, there was that pop song in the beginning when Faye's flying in the Red Tail. Like, that was actually a pretty good pop song, too, I have to say. Because you said you watched the movie recently.
Yeah, the movie's pretty good, too. It has good music, just like the show.
Yeah, I'm sure we can talk about the movie in a second, but I was going to mention how, like, Bebop is a lot of things, it pays a lot of homage to things that I think only, like, Watanabe really likes. Like, there's the episode about living in the fridge, which, the title is from the Weird Al song. But then the plot of the show is something like a sci-fi horror movie, like 2001: A Space Odyssey or Aliens or whatever.
That's the bottle episode, right?
The what episode?
Bottle episode, like that's the one that's just in the ship, right?
Yes, it all takes place in the ship, okay. But they have like this funky like mole that goes and attacks them. Like, that happens to be, that's another one that's, like, one of my favorite episodes, too.
So,
Toonami, I like how they did the shout-out to that in Space Dandy, where they had the fridge show up on the Pooch Planet.
Yes!
And meow.
Yeah! Yeah, that was something I caught on when we watched Space Dandy. What were you saying, Daft?
Oh my gosh. Only last what I said. Totally lost what I was gonna say.
I didn't know if he had like there's other homages in the show too. Like they make references to like Bruce Lee. I mean like what was it like for Ballad of Fallen Angels, like the scene like the shootout inside the church is a very John Woo style thing for John Woo to do in his action movies where they have shootouts in church. Like there's a movie called The Killer where they have like a giant shootout in the church. So that kind of plays a homage to that movie and that scene. I know, like, when I went to the Watanabe panel, like, when I first saw, like, Bebop, there was a lot of things I noticed, like, oh, this is from different movies. But there's also stuff from different music, too. But a lot of people that were asking Watanabe questions was nothing about, like, the pop culture references in the show, but just music. And I was like, I'm waiting for, like, I should have been up there to ask about the pop culture references. Like, you know, like, if you could do, like, Bebop again, like, what were some things that you had to leave out or you wanted to add it to Bebop that you really liked that was from American pop culture? Like, another one I can think of is the first episode of Asteroid Blues. Is it basically a homage to Desperado with Antonio Banderas? Because you got Asimov that's basically, like, anime Antonio Banderas. So like the bar shootout in the very beginning is like the exact same bar that was in the movie Desperado. So that's like, it's little stuff like that throughout the show that you can like catch up on if you've seen the movies and like really pay close attention. Cause you'll find something you really like. So it's just interesting that like Watanabe had all these liberties to basically just do whatever he wanted to do. And then add in whatever he wanted to make the show just a really unique thing, which I think why, because he had that in there, is why it did so well in America. Because it was based on a whole lot of American culture and foreign culture and then just stuff in Japan.
Yeah, it's very different from other shows that were coming out in Japan, because we're not really aiming at the global mass market very much at this point. Other than maybe some of the robot shows, which they knew they could get to air in Europe, but in general, a lot of this stuff was just made for Japan only, and this started to kind of change that, where they add influences from other countries and American culture as well as Japanese culture being a part of it.
Yeah. Do you want to? So, John, what was your, when you saw the Bebop movie? Was that your first time ever watching it?
No, I've seen it before.
Okay,
it might be the first time I've seen it dubbed. So, I have it on DVD. I think I dubbed the first time.
Okay, because I've still got my Bebop movie from when Sony Pictures put it out, like in 2003. And like the initial track when it starts out is in Japanese, and they have to switch it over to English, which is really odd for them to do something like that.
That's probably they're trying to virtue signal there, prove that they're not saying, "Oh, our American version created this." We're acknowledging that it's first and foremost a foreign product or something.
Yeah, which is weird for you put out something anime form, and the first track is always the English track.
Usually, because that's the thinking is if somebody's buying it rather than just downloading it, they're probably going to want to hear the dub, you know? That's one of the main draws of the DVD.
I do know when I first saw the movie, it was subtitled. And I remember there was a guy, I think I heard about the movie before I actually saw it, because it was a guy that had his laptop with him. And my sophomore year of high school, and he brought it in there, and he's like, and I was like, hey, I think his name was Kevin. I was like, Kevin, what are you watching? He's just like, oh, I don't know if you heard of it, the Cowboy Bebop movie. I was like, yeah, I heard about that. I just haven't seen it yet. So we watched the first 10 minutes of it in there. And he might have been the one that burned me a copy of that movie. But then I went home and watched it on my computer. So I got to, I saw it about a year or so before it officially came out on DVD. When I heard it came out on DVD, I was like, well, heck yeah, I'm going to get this. And,
yeah.
No, that's, yeah, because you're asking what period it took place. And it's in between it takes place in between a couple episodes before the last the last episode. So it's,
yeah, supposedly it happens before 22 or 23.
Yeah, before they lose Ed.
Yeah, 24 is when Ed leaves, but I think the reason people put it before 23 was because the Big Shots Bounty Hunter show is canceled in that episode. Which is the episode where it's all about TV.
Oh, Brain Scratch?
Yeah, and that episode was the last one where the Big Shots Bounty Hunter show is featured, and then the character shows up at the airport in Real Folk Blues.
Yeah,
the black guy on there. But in the movie, they still have that show on the air, so people said that it must take place before 23, but there's nothing really specific about it that has it. Where it has to take place right before that episode rather than in between any of the other previous 13 episodes or so after Ed joins the crew, but before he leaves.
Yeah, I think the time placement, is something officially Watanabe said, it took place before that episode. Because anywhere, that movie could be placed anywhere else.
Find a specific quote about why it took place there specifically. So all I can guess is that people just thought it happened to take place there. Because
I'm pretty sure I saw somebody linked to some sort of excerpt that Watanabe said on a website about that. I have to find that. Yeah, but that could happen any point in time after everyone's gathered together on the ship. So anytime after Edward appears in the series.
There's not really any major changes to the status quo between Ed joining and Ed leaving, so it's kind of could be anywhere in there because it doesn't really relate to the main plot. Vicious isn't in it or anything.
Yeah.
So
I like how it does its own thing.
It's just another incident. And it is good. You know, it's one of the best anime movies.
I will give it that, yeah. I was actually thinking, like, so if we had a top three of favorite episodes of Bebop, like, what would it be?
Hold on, I'm getting a phone call. I'll be right back.
All right.
I would probably put Faye's origin story in my top three. The episode is so good. I, like, vividly remember, like, most of the details from that episode.
Yeah, that's a really good one, because you're talking about the one with the VHS or the Betamax tape.
Yeah, where she's watching from the past and she finds out her origin and everything like that. Like, you'd think, like, on paper, like, the fact she was, like, frozen or, like, from the past, that would, like, be really shitty and not well done. But Bebop makes it work. With weird premises and makes them work. Like, obviously, the mushroom episode is definitely up
that
there.
That's definitely one of my top ones, because that's such a blaxploitation episode, and I freaking love it.
Yeah, it's just like Bebop, that's something that you can do with episodic shows that you can't necessarily do with shows of heavy continuity. That, like, just doing this, like, random fuck-off episode with two minor it is not as big of a character as Spike. And, like, just, like, Ed and I just going around on this fucking adventure.
I feel like after Jupiter Jazz is when we get into, like, really, like, the backstory of the other characters. Like, so, like, after Jupiter Jazz, like, My Funny Valentine is about, like, Faye meeting the guy that, like, kind of gave her all the debt that she has. And then a couple episodes later, it's Speak Like a Child, which is your favorite episode. And then in between that is Jet's backstory with Black Dog Serenade. I'm looking the episode titles up on Wikipedia. I actually do like Black Dog Serenade. I remember, like, the preview episode for that was, like, you know, Bo Billingsley's like, you know, only old men would like this episode because it's an episode about old men and their past. Like, you kids shouldn't watch it. You women shouldn't watch it. No one should watch it but old men, because only old men would get it. That was on the, because I was going through my tapes, recorded tapes on that, and I saw the preview for that. I was like, wow, that's actually, like, a really good preview. Yeah, so I was looking up the information on Mushroom Samba, and it says that the excerpt on that is this episode pays homage to the 70s blaxploitation films such as Coffee and Shaft, who are two bounty hunters in the episodes are named, and then Shaft dragging a coffin behind him wherever he goes is a reference to the 66 Django movie. Not the the old Django movie. I've actually got the DVD collection of that I got from Walmart. I gotta sit through and watch that. I gotta check that out. Yeah, it's little stuff like that makes it so interesting, that it's a homage to an old spaghetti western.
Yeah, Bebop is a really good example of remix culture. Like, it's a good example, especially of remix culture.
Yeah,
because, like, you're taking all these established things and just kind of, like, sprinkling it in there. It really adds to the show that they're paying homage to these iconic things while also making something of their own. Oh, actually, speaking of remix culture, the final poster for Ready Player One came out, and the Swordfish is actually on it, which is really cool.
Well, dead gummit, I got to see this movie now. It's got a Gundam. It's got the Swordfish.
They cut Ultraman out because whoever holds the rights for that didn't let them use it.
Well, all right. Like,
the giant is plastered everywhere.
wait. So, like, is Ultraman cut out of the movie, or is it just, like, Ultraman's not on the promo, like, the posters?
In the movie, the role got it got replaced by Iron Giant. That's why Iron Giant's been in all of the trailers.
Okay, that makes sense. If I have to go with my top three, Pierrot Le Fou is definitely number one. That's my top one, because that's what got me into it. I really like Wild Horses, when he takes his mono racer to get maintenance. But I like Mushroom Samba as well, because that's just a fun episode. And then probably Toys in the Attic is number three. or maybe number two. I don't know. There's like, I can tell you, like, my least favorite episode is that Boogie Woogie Feng Shui, because I've only seen it like one time. I really like, oh no, I think my next one is Cowboy Funk, the Teddy Bomber episode with Cowboy Andy. Brain Scratch, I only saw that like one time, and I probably need to rewatch it again. But like, Cowboy Funk's a really good episode. I think, so yeah, my top three are Pierrot Le Fou, Cowboy Funk, and Mushroom Samba. I think we can go with that.
I always really like Stray Dog Strut.
That was the that's another good one too. The second episode,
really well in this show.
Yeah,
you don't really see chase scenes anymore.
Yeah, that was actually a pretty decent chase scene.
Yeah, like, you don't really like. I'm trying to think of like the last show I watched that like, or anime I watched that had like a madcap chase sequence. I really can't think of one.
I mean, the only one I can think of with like a good car chase in anime is probably going to be like Red Line, but that was more of an intergalactic Wild. Race movie, and I mean, that makes
sense.
Yeah,
that's like Wacky Racers on.
Oh yeah, I gotta say that's probably like the best racing movie out there. if you take them all together, I'm gonna have to put that above like even the live action Speed Racer movie, even though I really like the live action Speed Racer movie.
It's really underrated. Like, is it great? No, but there's some. It looks interesting.
Yeah.
I'm sure it hasn't aged well in a decade. Literally a decade, I think, which is wild to think about.
I haven't. Last time I saw it was about 10 years ago, because I went and saw it in the theaters, and then I got it on DVD when it came out. And I was, like, hyped to show to, like, the people that I, like, with my brother and some of his friends. And our room was divided on, like, who liked that movie and who didn't like that movie. Like, my parents and then some friend, like, some girls, like, my brother knew, like, and he invited over. Like, they were, like, completely out of the movie. And then, like, it was me, my brother, and, like, the guys that were there. Like, were totally into it. So it was like a split 50-50, like, you know, if we really liked this movie or really didn't. And I was kind of disappointed that no one else, like, appreciated the movie like I did. I think that's kind of my top three episodes and your top three episodes, and then I'm not sure when John's gonna get back.
They released Funko Pops for Cowboy Bebop.
Yes,
recently.
I do have I have the Spike one. That's kind of the only one I really want.
Like, they're pretty decent. One of my friends savages them and says they look nothing like the characters, but I think they're pretty darn good. But so they made them of Faye, Jet, Spike, and Ed, but they didn't make one for Ayn.
I definitely get Ayn.
So what some of the collectors have been doing is a pop recently came out for Queen Elizabeth II and with a corgi. And so people have just been throwing, like, just been buying that just to put, to have an Ayn. And just throwing away the Queen Elizabeth. It might actually do that because it is freaking cute.
I'm gonna look this up. I didn't realize the Queen Elizabeth pop figure came with a corgi. I noticed they have royal corgis around the palace, but let's see, Queen Elizabeth
pop. I'll send it.
All right, I'm Googling it now. Oh, I see it. It's just got a pink hat on. That is a very cute corgi.
Yeah, I just don't know if I can justify spending $10 for that.
For a queen, yeah, for Queen Elizabeth.
Well, for a tiny little dog, and then I'm just going to throw away the old lady. I guess I could melt the. I could like do something horrific to Queen Elizabeth II. I could melt it or something.
You know, you could just wait till Queen Elizabeth dies and then go on YouTube of you like melting her on the stove or something.
Melt it on Independence Day. Yeah, I'll blow it up with fireworks. There we go.
Yeah, yeah. You show that queen. All right. John, we were before you had to take your, or actually when you're taking your phone call, Daft and I came up with our top three episodes of Bebop.
Okay, which ones?
All right, so I picked Pierrot Le Fou is my number one, Cowboy Funk is number two, and Mushroom Samba is number three. And then
those are classics.
So I
have Stray Dog Strut. I forget the name of the one where Faye.
Oh,
about our origin. I had the mushroom samba mine as well.
Okay, well, My Funny Valentine is her acquiring the debt, but Speak Like a Child was the one about the Betamax tape.
But honestly, both of those are tied for me. Both of them are so good.
Yeah, they are really good episodes. You can have them both for number whatever. Yeah. So what? So do you have any? Do you have your top three, John?
It's hard to pick. I didn't know we were going to do this, but
I know
it's also hard because there's so many. Like, honestly, I feel like this show is all the episodes are really iconic.
Yeah,
this is considered a consensus anime.
Yeah, I think my tie number three is between Toys in the Attic and Mushroom Samba.
I just saw Real Folk Blues earlier today, so I'm gonna have to put it in there. And I'll take two slots, but it is like probably the best ending to any anime that I can think of. You know, it just ties it all together and concludes it very perfectly. So it's hard to argue with that one.
All right, I'll tell you what. I'll give you a cheat sheet of the Wikipedia with all of the episode lists because that's what I've been doing. And you can
if you can, you type in WIKIPED.
I did the job, Daft. He doesn't have to type anything, but uses Mousy.
John stalled for time to pick his top three.
I know.
I'll read the rest of the URL /WIK.
Oh, it's freaking bejesus. /LIST_ARENE_COW_BOY_BEBOP_episodes. All right.
Okay, so just to a little bit more, I pick a two-part episode that he said he doesn't like the two-parters as much as the others, and I'll pick Ballad of Fallen Angels since he said he doesn't like that one as much as some of the others.
Oh, you're the sellout that wants to go with Ballad of Fallen Angels like what everyone else does, but it's still a good episode. I'm not gonna lie, but all right. So you're going for five and then the last two episodes, episode five?
I do like the single episodes. They don't tie into the overall plot too, but I do like seeing the episodes of Bebop, Jupiter Jazz, and they did a best of marathon of a few years ago on Toonami. I think probably 2013 or 2014. And they picked some great ones in there. They had Pure Lofu, they had all the main story episodes with Vicious, and they had I think they probably had the first episode in there, which is, you know, it starts off the show in a great way.
Mm-hmm.
Right off the bat, you can tell it's going to be something different because it has like a drug plot and everything. That's not something you usually see in an anime. Yeah.
All right, John, I'm going to give you another cheat sheet. I'm giving you the Amazon listing for the Cowboy Bebop Best Sessions DVD, where this is Bandai is what considers like the best episodes of Cowboy Bebop. And I'm pretty sure you'll have your top three on some of that, on one of those DVDs in there. I think for me, like, oh, so they have a director's choice and a fan favorite. So they must have done like a vote or whatever through Bandai, like, oh, pick your favorite, you know, Bebop episodes. And sadly enough, Pierrot Le Fou is not on this DVD, which is why I've never had any desire to pick this thing up.
I do love Mushroom Samba too.
Yeah, I know. That's probably the only one I really liked on this list. And, like, Waltz for Venus is a good episode, but like it's definitely not up there. Oh shoot, I never talked about the edits when it was on TV originally. So speaking of Waltz for Venus, there was like two gay dudes getting it on in bed, and Faye barges in. So in the original cut or the original edit, it's basically like one dude basically like on the dominant position on his bed with nobody underneath him, And he just looks up at Faye. And then, of course, Faye puts a gun in his mouth. And, like, you clearly, like, they only took the guy out, but they didn't take out his audio. So you hear, like, two, like, dudes, like, oh, like in the scene. So, like, my first thought, like, when I saw that, I was like, is this guy, like, in the middle of jacking off and she walks in on him? Like, I didn't know what to think when I saw that.
And yeah, nobody knew what was the deal with that when it first aired, I guess.
Yeah, I was like, why is that guy in his random position? The other edit I can think of is the one where, I think it is Ballad of Fallen Angels. Yeah, it is. When he walks into, that girl that runs that, like, that thrift or that convenience store, and there's, like, the two boys, like, stealing, like, adult magazines. So in the TV episode, or in the TV censorship, they basically put, like, another layer of clothing over the woman's nipples on the magazine, whereas in the DVD, it's, of course, uncensored. And, and then in Jupiter Jazz, the other one I can think of is, when basically Ren comes out of the shower, and so, like, he's undergoing this genetic stuff where he basically grows breasts as a guy, so he's a actual transgender person instead of just a wannabe. And basically they did, like, this cropping thing of, like, a zoom in, like, right on Faye and his face, so they didn't have to worry about censoring out his, like, his breast or whatever. So they completely, like, found a way to, like, close in on that top, like, on that one corner of the screen when he walks in the frame. And, like, I clearly, like, I didn't really notice, you don't really notice it then, but then, like, now, like, you can definitely tell it when I rewatch it again.
Yeah, I remember seeing a thread on Toon Zone where some member, I think it was Daikun, but I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Might have been someone else, but was claiming that the editing process for Cowboy Bebop was homophobic, and that they wouldn't have edited out those people having sex if it was a straight couple. And then other people were saying, well, actually, you can't air people having sex if they're heterosexual either on Cartoon Network. And so there was kind of like an argument over that, but nowadays they were able to show it when they aired it in HD. But the grand thing, they did have to do pixelation on the nipples, but they didn't zoom in like they did on the original airing. So
yeah,
there have been some changes in standards where they can get away with a lot more on that kind of stuff now. The gay guys in Outlaw Star, gay guy Fred Lowe,
yeah,
he was toned down in the Toonami and Adult Swim airings of Outlaw Star in the early 2000s too, because they had to make it seem like he was, you know, not sexually interested in Jim, but then, well, not in Jim, but rather in Gene.
Yeah, in Gene.
If it was Jim, it would be even worse.
Oh, that would be, but, yeah, he's a gay pedophile.
Yeah, he's Milo.
Oh! Hey,
I think they just kind of made it seem like he was just randomly a benefactor of Gene, or he's friends with him or something.
Yeah.
Try to explain it. But they actually did redub some of the dialogue. They wouldn't just edit things out. They would have them say, like, darn instead of damn. And there's a lot of cursing in the uncut version of Outlaw Star.
So yeah, there is.
They had to change a lot. But, I mean, I wouldn't go as far as Dalek when he said, like, it's not the same show even because of these changes. I mean, I think you pretty much get the gist of the show, even if it's edited.
Yeah.
And same with Cowboy Bebop. But, I mean, it sucked that they had to cut out some episodes entirely, but I mean, eventually they did air.
Do we have anything else we want to say on Cowboy Bebop?
I guess we could go on to the con reviews, or I have Love That Goku tweets too. All
right. Yeah, I got a couple. I mean, I got like a couple things I can talk about. I got like one main thing I can talk about. But other than, well, I mean, like, there's actually a few other things we can talk about for sure.
Okay, here's the go. I love that Goku tweets.
All right, so now we're official closing remarks. All right, go.
Who calls social services on me? Social services came to the house and yell at me for child neglect and failing to report the death of Great Aunt Maylee. Well, I've been sentenced to 50 hours community service. I told the judge my very existence is community service. I give back to my community with every breath I take, you gavel-slamming pig man. And that's the last we heard from him. Maybe he got sentenced to something even further. like obstruction of justice or contempt of court or something for that outburst.
I was just reading the chat log for Slack, and Daff posted up that there's a post by Linkara that he officially left Channel Awesome, or that guy with the glasses. I thought everyone has left that site by now.
There are still some people there, like Cinema Snob's still there. But so the reason why he left, well, a big reason of why he left is so about a week ago, there was a Twitter thread that spanned over 2 days and like literally hundreds of tweets about how shitty the CEO for Channel Awesome is and how incompetent is and how a lot of the producers got treated like garbage.
Oh, so the CEO, Mike McCaud or whatever, because I'm reading it through the post right now.
Or what did you say? Sorry.
Oh, I was saying you said the CEO, and the only thing I see for CEO is Mike McCaud or Mitchell.
Yeah, so okay. Apparently the only contracts that ever were really distributed were after people got injured on their anniversary movie, as soon as they got injured, they had to sign an injury waiver saying they couldn't sue.
Good litigation there.
Yeah, but like, so they had forms for that, but they didn't have like contracts for the content producers to put stuff on the site
or get paid.
Well, how is McFarland with them for so long if he's not getting paid through a contract?
He was getting money, so like. Views.
Okay, so, I mean, they get their content from basically the viewership that they receive.
I assume he makes a lot of money on Patreon.
Yeah, every single one of these guys has a Patreon now.
YouTube too, he probably gets a lot of. He's able to do it full time. So, and considering like, there's really no point to Channel Awesome in 2018 anyway. Like a lot, like you can basically do the same thing that Channel Awesome does. On YouTube, you can just subscribe to all the channels. You know, you don't need like a fucking website and shit. They fired one of like they had like administration staff to run Channel Awesome, and apparently one of them got fired the day after she had like a major surgery.
So they wouldn't pay her insurance. That's fantastic.
I've never heard anything good about that website in terms of the way they treat their employees.
Or... You know,
you can make Spoony One seem like sane. Like there are some things on there, but actually, where Spoony actually you can defend Spoony One, and like if you have a story that you can defend Spoony One in, that's pretty sad.
I will say this: I was looking at MomoCon. It's the end of May. I know that SOB Doug Walker is going to be there. So if anybody wants to get their legs,
you guys
want to
guess how much? Okay, so he was at Rhode Island Comic Con. Do you guys want to guess how much he charged for a photo?
$200.
High. It's not that high. Like, okay.
Like 50?
40. But like for comparison, like most of the other people on like his row were charging like 20 to 30. And like he's a fucking internet celebrity. The Stranger Things kids were a couple of the Stranger Things kids were there and they were only charging 45.
And they're actual real celebrities. Like they've been on talk shows and
stuff. Yeah, they're actually talented. So like it's weird that like that Doug would charge something so similar to that.
Jeez, what a hack.
Yeah, each tweet is like worse than the last. Like it's like, I literally read like 300, like literally 300 tweets. Like it was like I was reading a Cloud's tweet log that he used to the diffuse links. But like they were it was fascinating.
Diffuse now on Discord rather.
Yeah. But it's like insane. So it's not surprising that Linkara left because he was actually openly shitting on the CEO guy. Not as much Doug, but there was some stuff with Doug. Culture Critic, that was pretty bad too. But most of the ire was directed towards the CEO guy.
Yeah. I mean, there's
Linkara
so many.
Still with that guy, that girl that people used to hate, Iron Liz.
No,
or whatever,
apparently he's married.
They got married.
Wow. Okay. Wait, he's married. Wait, he's married to Iron Liz, or he's married to another girl that's not.
No, he's married to someone else. Apparently, but I didn't know until I read his goodbye letter.
Interesting.
Well, it's. I mean, Iron Liz isn't the only trans person on that site, or someone that became trans, because you got freaking Jess Otaka became Jacob Chapman or whatever.
Channel Awesome.
Yeah, it's like something about that site makes women want to be men. Literally. Oh man, but there's been so much like garbage rear up from that, from that guy with the glasses and Channel Awesome. Like, I mean, you got the Mr. Medicore YouTuber guy that basically went on those videos like pulling up all this information about the other members. And he actually did a video like on basically like Linkara's backstory, which is interesting because he was a webcomic person and he had like a really crappy webcomic. And they took like one of the superheroes' names out of the webcomic, and that's what he called himself to be, a critic reviewer of other webcomics.
That video was really well done. Medicare makes some really fucking well done videos.
I feel like he goes out and starts fights, but like maybe other people like are annoyed that he's so honest, like how bad these people are. They just want like pick a fight with him. I'm not sure.
You can overanalyze anything and make it like seem vile. Like you could probably like if you talk about like a napkin for 40 minutes, you're eventually going to find things to hate them on. You know? Sometimes he does use just like insults for the sake of insults rather than like actually back up his statements.
Yeah.
Like, but when he does back up his statements, it's insane. Like his 40-minute, he has a 40-minute video on Randy Stair, who, that gentleman, for our listener, he believed that if he died, he would get reincarnated as a character to a ghost girl equivalent of Ember from Danny Phantom.
Yeah, no, we talked about him like when that happened like a year ago. But I mean, you can re-bring it up again. But
that's that really needs to be said. So he managed to go to the afterlife after shooting up three people in the supermarket where he worked.
Yeah,
which he decided to do the shooting there via a flip of a coin.
So he's a literal two-face.
There's video of him flipping the coin.
That's unbelievable.
Well, all his videos are gone, but he put up like a 17-hour video of like his like dissertation, and weirdly enough, I wind up like archiving that on a hard drive somewhere because I'm like, you know, somebody may want this one day on the internet, and I have it. But I'm sure I'm part of like a thousand people.
Later, if I can't find a link on Encyclopedia Dramatica later, I actually do want to copy that.
Okay, I still got it. I mean, it's like a gig big because it's 17 hours. But I'll definitely send it to you.
Did you watch any of it?
No, I haven't. I think I listened to like clips of it here and there, but that's about it.
It seems like that would be kind of a messed up thing to waste that much space on.
I have a lot of things that are messed up to most normal people that I happen to archive just for the sake of archiving it.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sure need access to.
That's part of the skeletons in my closet, but
I gained access to one of my my websites that I get a lot of my VHS and awful PSA tapes from, and some of the stuff I found on there was like so horrendous that even I wouldn't download it. Because they have a lot of foreign films and a lot of like they have like a lot of blank exploitation type films.
Yeah.
So he's more wild than the last.
Oh.
I do need to go. But before I leave, I do just want to send a notice out to any of our listener in the Buffalo, New York area. we have a friend in need who we're raising funds for. He got evicted from his own home somehow. I'm not exactly sure how, but
there's a lot of howl behind that.
but he is currently he got kicked out of a shelter and is currently looking for a roof over his head. So if you have like a shed or like a doghouse that he could stay in, that would be greatly appreciated.
I don't think there's a doghouse big enough to fit him in there.
So if you can assist, please tweet at TR Mason.
There you go.
Enjoy your con talk.
All right, later. John, do you want to get into Mason's homelessness situation?
Yeah, sure. Daft, are you the person who gave him $50? Or was he's gone?
He's gone, yeah.
I bet it was.
I guess we'll never know who gave him more money. But man, it's a pretty good assumption it's one of those two.
I mean, who else would do it? I don't think TY pays attention anymore to what's going on.
No, I mean, we haven't seen him in a long time.
He just disappears for months at a time, so it's to be expected. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's some other person that Mason knows, but he somehow got $50 on Facebook when he was trying to raise money for an apartment. But he's not going to be able to pay his rent with Facebook donations. Like, what is he thinking?
I know.
He doesn't even have... I mean, what's he going to put on his application for an apartment? Like, I'm going to crowdsource my rent check. That nobody's going to accept that.
Did he accept Bitcoin?
He posted something about Bitcoin the other day.
Oh my God.
I don't know if this is true, but he was trying to justify that he didn't buy Bitcoin. I think there's some article, and it said, I'm pulling it up here, but some bizarre claim that Bitcoin contains, here we go, all Bitcoin users traffic child pornography, it seems. Probably good that I haven't invested in it yet. he said that amidst a bunch of tweets about, like, him sleeping at the laundromat and getting kicked out of the homeless shelter. And it's like, maybe you would have made some money if you were doing Bitcoin. I don't know. But and Ghost claims he makes a ton of money by just trading coin to coin on these crypto things. But I don't know how many people actually make money off that versus just waste all their money and then lose it all.
Yeah.
And I don't think Mason would be really all that good at trading. But yeah, he's been evicted because he owed a bunch of money in back taxes, and he's got temporary housing. He said he was going to have it for 10 days, but then a couple nights ago he posted saying that he was being evicted after only like 1 or 2 days in there, and there was no explanation as to why he was kicked out of the homeless shelter or what happened exactly. Daft and I were like speculating about, like, was he too noisy or too smelly, or did he keep everybody up by playing Toonami really loud, or was he trying to start a makeshift tune radio in there, or what was going on? But for some reason, they won't even take him at the homeless shelter. So we don't know where he is now or what he's doing. But to anyone who used to listen to us on tune radio, that's never going to happen again. I mean, this guy's life is running.
So, this just in, because apparently this happened over the weekend, unbeknownst to me. The Gunsmith Cast Kickstarter went live, and it had a pledge goal of $75,000. And I'm reading the ANN news article on this, where it met its goal within 5 hours. And it's already... there's a lot of backers for it. There's 1,467 backers, so I'm going to go ahead and back this project after this podcast is over, but it's already made 200% of its goal. So it's at 152,000 right now. It's still going to go up. So I got to get on with Robert and be like, hey, now that this is funded, I want to work on it. So I did not even know this went live over the weekend. Thanks, Robert.
I have a couple of Mason tweets to read. One is, the shelter kicked me out of my bed, it seems. We'll have to see why in the morning. And that was a couple of nights ago, and then he said right after that, homeless, but I can still watch Dragon Ball Super on Toonami, because he's paying for a TV subscription even though he doesn't have a house
to watch TV on.
He's got Sling TV and he's got YouTube TV.
Oh man,
and he's subscribing to both even though they have the same channels. So the good old fashioned Mason wasting a bunch of money when he's homeless. I mean, Josh said, that sounds like a Love That Goku tweet, the one where he was talking about watching Dragon Ball Super while homeless.
Yeah.
I don't know what his way out of this is, if he can't even I mean, you used to say, like, he should just go to public housing or something because he can't afford to keep that house where he couldn't pay the property taxes on it.
Yeah.
And it is kind of crazy that somebody who's poor that has almost no income could be literally taxed out of house and home and then the shelters won't take them. Like, isn't this a complete failure of our so-called welfare state that Mason's situation has gotten to this point and he's been exiled from his own home because the government wanted money from him, you know? Like, that seems kind of unjust if the whole point of these taxes is supposedly to help the poor, unfortunate people that need social welfare spending. But then once he's kicked out of his house to pay these taxes, they won't let him stay in their, you know, shitty little homeless centers.
Yeah.
Like, what is he supposed to do now? He's completely screwed. And in part, it's because he wasted so much money on Tune Radio, but also that the whole tax issue is kind of messed up that he would owe all this money when he doesn't have any means of paying it. And yeah. It's not like the property he was on is some really valuable property.
Especially when he's getting his house broken into. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that property, it was foreclosed on, and it sold for $30,000. That's just abysmal. And it's like a full home. But it's like in this ghetto-infested neighborhood of Buffalo where he's living, where he gets burglarized almost every single day. You know, there were weeks where he would come on multiple times and throw off another burglar. And it's just kind of like a fact of life up there. That, like the blizzards that he gets hit by all the time. You know, he's going to be outside in this crime-infested, freezing city. You know, how long is he even going to survive out there?
I don't know, man. Yeah, well, I'm reading on the Gunsmith Cats campaign thing. I'm actually gonna, I got a donation I'm already gonna set up and pay for, but so supposedly there was an announcement a couple weeks ago about how, so Kenichi Sonata is coming to Anime Central Convention in Illinois, which is like the first time he's been at a con in like a couple of years. And they have a Gunsmith Cats reboot anime, which I think is just a short that they're doing. And so I'm assuming this is going to be on the Blu-ray. It has to be. But I'll find out more from Robert once this thing fully gets funded. And I already told him I was really interested in working on this, so we'll see what happens. Because I'd love to freaking work on Gunsmith Cats. But, yeah, we'll see. Now that, like, it's already past 125,000, so it's going to fund a new 4-page Gunsmith Cats manga by Sonata, so that'd be pretty interesting. Well, I'll just take care of that premium thing once we get off this call. So other than that, Gunsmith Cats is support it. I had a couple, so I went to so far in the month of March, I've been to 3 cons. My God. So the second one I went to, which was a week after the crappy sci-fi expo, they have a toy convention in Atlanta called Toylana, but it was originally called it's basically used to be like a G.I. Joe convention, and like on the website it's joelana.com, but they're trying to get it to Toylana so they can add in other things besides G.I. Joe figures. So I went there with the guy from my Gundam group, which I've basically spent most of my weekends this month hanging out with, because I just hung out with him this past weekend, or this whole weekend that we're recording on. And, so I went to Toylana and I bought a couple of, I got a few action figures there. I'm basically kind of on this kick where I want to collect, like Cable figures, because I think they're going to turn around and go up in value, like, once the Deadpool movie comes out. So I found, like, I've basically, in the past couple weeks, I've gotten 2 Cable action figures. Like, over the weekend, I got a Cable Marvel Legends figure that will probably go up in value. But we'll see. I still got it in the box. And then, I'll get into that later. But, yeah, Toylana was that. It's mostly, like, G.I. Joe and, like, World War II figures. So, like, there used to be a toy line called, like, Ultimate Soldier, like, in the early 2000s that I was really big into collecting. And it had, like, a lot of detail to the weapons for for these figures. And a lot of people selling this stuff is stuff I haven't seen in, like, Toys R Us's in, like, over 15 years. Because it was mostly based on, like, World War II and, like, Vietnam. Like, little, like, they're like little mini 5-inch figures. And they have, like, a, like, you know, little arsenal of guns. So, like, I've got a couple of them where we have, like, a tank, like, a Sherman tank for one of them. I've got, like, a German fighter plane that I got for Christmas one year. They even had, like, still in the package, like, Stuka, like, dive bombers, like, figures. And I was like, holy crap. Like, I haven't seen these in a long time. But, yeah, it was mostly, like, G.I. Joe figures. Like, they had people, like, there was, like, an old guy at, like, a sewing booth that all he did was sew up G.I. Joe uniforms. And, like, I've never seen that before. Like, I've never even thought about, like, someone dedicated their time, like, sewing up G.I. Joe uniforms. But that is a thing. Which I thought was, like, really interesting.
You gotta have a medic for the G.I. Joe team.
Yeah, you gotta have a human medic to try to, like, patch him up. And I mean, I bought a couple of, like, German machine guns because I was wanting to do, like, I want to use this as, like, a kit bash thing for, like, my Gunpla. Because I'm trying to think of, like, going as a Kasahiga Kondo style, like, model kit where, like, basically in his manga, he's got, like, you know, these Sazabi figures with, like, German machine guns, like, as, like, laser beams or whatever. So I'd be like, oh, that'd be really cool as, like a kit bash idea or whatever. So I've got that, like, as a project I want to do. So I bought, like, I bought a few things for that. I'm just thinking. No, it was really interesting. And it's a lot of, like, older men that are there. I think there was, like, there's an actual, like, G.I. Joe club where people were, like, in these biker jackets. And they have, like, these giant, like, G.I. Joe club, like, biker, like, patches on the back of them or whatever. And I was just, like, really amazed. Like, this is, like a nerd culture I've never seen before. So then, like, when I went and watched that, the Toys That Made Us Netflix documentary thing or series that's on there, like, the first thing I saw was the G.I. Joe one. And, yeah, I was, like, pretty interested, these diehard people that, like, worked on G.I. Joe. There was a guy selling a comic, like, comic books there, and he had a,
I didn't watch the other episodes yet, but I saw the He-Man one of those.
Yeah, the He-Man one is, interesting? Yeah, the He-Man one was interesting because they basically BS that whole toy line.
Yeah.
Like, their names came literally from them going out drinking and coming up with, like, the stupidest name and writing them down on, like, bar napkins.
Yeah. They couldn't use Seaman because they thought it sounded too much like Seaman.
Yeah, like, oh, the kids say too fast. That wouldn't sound right. So we'll just change it to Merman.
Yeah. They would come up with the stuff, like, as they were in the process of trying to sell it to toy stores. The toy store would be asking them questions, and it would be, like, things they hadn't thought of before.
Yeah, until someone says it on the spot, like, yeah, we're going to do a comic book series on it. And then they get out of the meeting, like, what do you mean a comic book series? Like, we gotta get, like, who do we got in Marvel to make a comic book series, like, in the next 2 hours? Like, it's ridiculous stuff like that.
Yeah. So I actually have some of the early 80s ones, and I dug them out to see how improvised they were. And they actually had, Kurt Swan, which was the main Superman artist at the time, do couple issues crossing over Superman with the He-Man, and
oh wow,
they put some production value into it, but they must have been on a pretty quick, you know, Kurt Swan, he could draw stuff really quickly because he would have to draw dozens of pages of Superman every month from all the different comics he was appearing in.
Yeah,
so I assume they just, like, they shipped it out to the guy that they knew could do it as fast as possible. They stuck in Superman because they're like, hey, let's add some character that kids already know. And he can interact with this new character, and then everybody will want to buy toys with this new character, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that even though everything that they did was just like BSing, like it all turned out so well for them, which is the amazing part of watching that, is that they were just like improvising, but everything they did worked.
Yeah.
They got really lucky.
It is utter blind luck on that.
Yeah. I don't know if the G.I. Joe one was like that or if they were a little more professional.
No, well, the thing was with the G.I. Joe is they already had G.I. Joe established from the 60s. And G.I. Joe is a Hasbro line. Yeah. And I think, yeah, He-Man is from Mattel, I believe. Yes. Uh-huh. So like they were, so like when they brought back G.I. Joe in the 80s, it was already like during the Reagan era. So it was like, oh, we have a bad guy and that's the Russians. So we have like, you know, have these enemies where they can kind of like, there's a reason why you want to be patriotic for your country. Cause like because of the 70s and the Vietnam War, like G.I. Joe didn't sell well because people were opposed to the war.
Interesting. So was there a period where they were not selling G.I. Joe toys or?
Yeah, for like a couple of years, like in the late 70s, early 80s. And then they decided to revamp it back with the 5-inch figure line. And then that's when they made the cartoon. And so because when you have the cartoon, you can basically sell the heck out of those.
Yeah. it was interesting on He-Man. It seemed like they had done some sort of research into psychology on, you know, what boys wanted and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
You know, I have the power. Like, that was a very carefully decided catchphrase that they came up with there for.
Yeah, because the psychology was. Because the psychology is just like boys naturally want to have the power and be in charge because that's men's nature, is to have, like, leadership and, you know, have the power, like, over something and be in charge of it. So, like, you know, their thing was, like, you know, these kids, they go at school all day and they have these, you know. They have their parents nagging them. They have their teachers nagging them, which are mostly women. So when they get home, they want to be in charge of their own world. They want to, like, do what they want to do. I have the power. You're going to do this. I'm giving you. Yeah. And so they're watching these boys interact with these toys, like, you know, in a certain way where there's, like, a command and a leadership there. And there's, like, this authority, the supreme authority on, like, what they should do in their roles. So then It's like, okay, so, like, you know, these boys, like, they want a, like, a masculine figure to, you know, emulate and to look up to be an actual hero. And so then that, you know, so that was like the main basis for like the He-Man line. It was like that kind of starting from there.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that they also said that the toy started to sell well with girls. And
that was their prompting on them making She-Ra, because the He-Man started outselling the Barbie line, and then the women were like in the Mattel department were like, no, we're not gonna have the men beat us. We're gonna make our own offshoot for women and call that She-Ra, and She-Ra did just as well.
Yeah, but I thought that the interesting thing was that the men thought that the She-Ra was making He-Man seem uncool. Like there was like a certain girly aspect to He-Man.
Yeah.
And you know, I admit when I was a kid, I was a little bit confused. Like, why is that also a part of this? Like, some of it is so masculine, and then you have like the pink castle, and yet the villain is still very cool, like Hordak. You know, he's almost as cool as Skeletor, but
right.
But then you have like a girl hero and that sort of thing, and so I guess a lot of boys probably think like that. They think like, I want to buy toys of men, you know, like, and
yeah,
they were accused of being sexist when the Beware the Batman cartoon failed to get a toy line. Because the toy company didn't want to make toys of Katana, which was his sidekick in that one. This female.
I think I remember hearing about that.
Yeah, and they were, the people who worked on the show were saying like, oh, well, it's this patriarchal toy company that's tearing this down. And, but it, I mean, I think they probably did it because of market research and demographics and understanding that boys want to buy toys of boys.
Yeah, they want to have like a masculine like leader or something to have that image that they can play with and look up to, and that's just natural human anatomy there. That's how men function.
Yeah, then there was like shots of the women who worked on She-Ra, and they were like, I couldn't believe the men at the department were saying this. It was so sexist that they thought that She-Ra might have line with the boys. Well, but then the men were kind of standing by it. They were like, yeah, we think that actually happened because we got letters from boys saying like, what's with She-Ra?
Yeah. Well, I can understand like 40% of girls watch He-Man because like, yeah, it's action, but then you got Prince Adam, who's like, you know, probably pretty dreamy. He's a prince. He's strong. He's protective. So that's like, oh, you know, that's the nature to like, you want a man that's going to protect them. So, and have something heroic like that. But what was interesting
is where Ghost would say, they're watching for the manly dominance, don't throw it around like it ain't shit. He always says that when he explains the transgender stuff. Listen to him.
Well, I saw the one about the Barbie line, which Barbie, by the way, is co-created by a man which
it was.
Yeah, it which they hardly ever gave him any credit after, like, because the lady that her family started up, the Mattel company, you know, she found the idea for Barbie from, like, a European doll that was basically off of a sort of an erotic comic, where basically the doll was sort of like, in this comic, a like a hooker for men. So then they took her shape, like, because the lady who was in charge of Mattel at the time, like, saw the figure, because there wasn't any really good, like, women, you know, toys for girls at that point in the 50s. So then she brought it back. So then, like, the guy that, you know, also worked on it, he also worked on the patenting and design for, like, how the Barbie doll moves. So really it's more him that was the artist behind making the Barbie doll, but then it's the girl that took the credit because of how his lifestyle was, because, like, he had, like, a royalty check thing or a contract where he had, like, 1% royalties based on all the sales. So he was raking in money when Barbie made it big. So he had, like, this mansion in California where it had a moat around it. He had, like, a hidden sex chamber downstairs and had, like, basically, like, a wild lifestyle. And then he wound up eventually committing suicide. But once, because the FBI got involved in Mattel because there was so much embezzlement happening on them trying to make sales. So the head of Barbie had to step down for basically go to prison for a while. But when she came back, you know, she did this tell-all story about, like, you know, how she was the main creator of Barbie and completely got rid of the other guy because, like, oh, it would be bad press if he had some notoriety. But, like, really, he's the one that worked on Barbie and worked on her design. So he's just as, if not more important to Barbie's creation than her. And so, like, I'm glad the documentary, like, brought this up. I don't have the names offhand.
Okay.
Let me take a look.
Yeah, I would be curious to see these. One of the things that I thought was interesting with He-Man was they had all the different people that were like discussing who created He-Man.
Yeah.
They had, like, one guy that just basically tore some Star Wars toys apart and reassembled them. And he was, like, going to call Boba Fett Bullet Head. And he just, like, tore the head off of Boba Fett and, like, stuck it on some other toy. and then he made, like, a rough concept of, like, oh, a muscular guy called He-Man, and then he took, like, some toy from the 60s or something, or the 70s.
Yeah.
And he just, like, changed it a little bit. So it was interesting that they were so derivative that they're just trying to find, like, another Star Wars to beat, you know, Star Wars at its own game with.
Yeah.
And, but then they had, like, other than that guy, they had also a comic artist that had, like, some earlier artwork he had done of a caveman style hero that, or barbarian style hero that, that they showed. And, I tried to find, like, is this something that was published or anything? And as far as I can tell, it was just like a sketch that he had drawn in a spare time or something, because I couldn't find any real information about it other than just that it was like a prototype of He-Man. But there were all these different people that were involved there too, so it's all this stuff goes back a long way, and you never know who exactly should be credited as the real creator or not.
Yeah.
Like some people that just get away with claiming to be the sole creator when other people do most of the work. Mm-hmm. There's all these people that say like Stan Lee should get as much credit as he does when Jack Kirby and Steve Ditko were just as involved with making characters like Spider-Man and Thor as Lee himself was, you know? So it's interesting, like, one person just has a stronger personality or a better lawyer, and then they go down in history as the guy who created this big multi-billion dollar franchise, and then the other people who were involved kind of just get forgotten about, or only people who are real experts on the subject even know who they are. Like, everybody's forever going to associate Stan Lee with those superheroes because he managed to survive longer than Ditko and Kirby.
Yeah.
He managed to stay at Marvel, and he managed to be in all of the movies relating to these characters. So he has dozens of cameos.
Yeah.
People will see those things decades from now, and they'll wonder, like, who is this guy? Why is he in all of them? And then they'll look it up and go, oh, he's the creator. So, but it sounds like this guy got shafted, kind of this weird pervert that also created Barbie.
Okay, so the guy is Jack Ryan, who was the designer for the Barbie doll line. And so, like, basically it was him and Ruth Handler. And Ruth Handler is the daughter or related to the co-founder of the Mattel company. But, I mean, like, Jack Ryan had a pretty wild lifestyle. Like, he was married to Zsa Gabor, And she's a notable actress back then that had a lot of husbands at one point, which her marriages never lasted more between 1 year and 5 years. It seemed to get pretty crazy, like, towards the 60s. She, like, married someone for about a year, and then she'd do it again about six more times. I mean, she married one guy for that lasted exactly, like, within a year. So she married Jack Ryan for, at one point, from 75 to 76. But, yeah, there's not too much about Jack Ryan's bio on the Wikipedia page. But, like, he's basically, like, you know, the co-designer for Barbie.
And there were four of them, right? There was G.I. Joe, Barbie, He-Man, and what was the other one?
Star Wars. Star Wars. Was the first one, yeah. And
did you see that one too?
Yeah, I saw all of them. But then they're going to be coming out with four more. Like, one's going to be on one's going to be on Transformers for sure. Like, that's the one I'm really looking forward to.
Of course.
The toys There's the toys that made us season two.
What else, like Voltron or Thundercats or Silverhawks?
Let me see. The Wikipedia page has... Okay, yeah, it said that for... and then the subsequent episodes on... I'm reading this on Wikipedia. The next four are going to be on Lego, Transformers, Hello Kitty, and Star Trek.
Okay. Interesting. I don't even know about Star Trek. I mean, who made the toys for that?
I have no idea, but I mean, Transformers.
Like, you see Star Wars, you see Battlestar Galactica. I never even see Star Trek toys really as much at toy shows.
No, I happen to see Star Trek stuff, but it's not as predominant as like Star Wars. And Battlestar Galactica is like here and there, but I see more of those two than I would like Star Trek figures. Okay, my thing with the Transformers I really want to see is how they're going to tackle when they bring up like the litigation stuff between the Transformer figure Jetfire and like Harmony Gold, because there was that whole thing about how like, because Harmony Gold is a they had the Robotech license, so they're like, oh, everything that's in Robotech, which is off Macross, belongs to us. You can't use any of the designs, and they're still like that today. And I think now people are really digging into, like, if Harmony Gold, all these licenses and these, like, you know, these these legal actions are threatening against people that say they claim they have the designs, if they really do have the copyright to those designs, because even in Japan, it's so backwards. So, it's really messed up. So, there's, like, somebody challenging them on that. And the big thing is, like, the big thing they want to succeed is, like, that Harmony Gold never, ever had anything in their legal contract that they owned any of the mech designs for the Macross series. Or they just had the show rights, not the actual mech designs or whatever. Because if that's the case, everyone's going to be, like, over there beating the hell out of that building and blowing it up. So
I doubt it gets brought up in this, honestly, because it's so long after the original line. Like, they're probably going to talk about the history from the 80s, not these recent lawsuits, and they would have to bring that up if they did an episode about Robotech, because that would have to deal with all the Harmony Gold stuff. But
yeah,
it's sort of tangentially related only to Transformers.
But the thing is, it's going to be tied into the Japanese designers for Transformers, and those are the people that worked on like Macross, like Shoji Karamori and Koichi Ohada. Oh man, I got to think.
They worked on the Japanese version of Transformers?
I believe so. Anything with, like, usually a transforming sequence, like, somebody that is either Koichi Ohada, Shoji Kawamori, and I can't think of the other ones. Crap. But they're going to, like, anyone that does any kind of design on a show or robots transforming, it's one of those three. I only named two of the names because they all worked for Big West or, oh man, my mind's blank, but Tatsunoko, Beck West was the animation studio behind Macross. No, Sunrise, I don't know if Sunrise did much. I don't know. It's a lot of company names to mention. But yeah, like it's a very good, documentary series on Netflix to check out. But no, like Toyland was really cool. It was just basically a big collector's market to buy stuff. I will say this, the biggest deal I got on something, what didn't not come from that, actually two things. The stuff that I really got that I was like, I'm glad I got, did not come from that toy, that from Toylanta, but came from comic book shops we went to, around or outside of Atlanta. One was in Duluth and the other one, was north of that, and I cannot think of the names, but one of the comic book shops me and this guy Eric hit up, I found a McFarlane Akira figure with Kaneda with his motorcycle, which is like the one thing I've been looking for years. And that sucker, brand new, sells for like about $100 online. And the comic book store had it on the top of this shelf that I didn't even know it was up there until Eric pointed out to me. He's like, "Hey, dude, there's an Akira figure." And I see the big box with Kaneda and the motorcycle in there. And I was like, oh my God, I have to have it. And the price tag for that thing, brand new, was $40. So the comic book shop had no idea the market on that, or they probably just didn't care. So I got that. And not only did I score that, I scored a perfect grade Gundam GPO2 for $80. And I got it. It's basically a used kit as a perfect grade because somebody looked like they started on it, like they built a couple of pieces and then they gave up. So it's practically a brand new kit. And so like the people at this comic book shop, like had it on the top shelf and I was like, well, hey, how much is that perfect grade up there? So then we had to like, they had to stumble to get the ladder out and like these two girls working. It was like a mother and her daughter working the shop. It seems like it's family owned, but, so like they're having trouble trying to get it down. So I was like, well, I'm taller than them. I'll just reach up and get there and get it. And it was so easy for me. And so then I looked inside of it. I saw that it was partially built and like it's been opened. And I know like a brand new of the perfect grade for that GPO1, goes for like over $200. So then like I gave him like a low ball amount of like, well, would you take 85 for it or 80 for it? And so like I figured like I was probably going to pay over 100. And then the mother was like, look, comparing prices online of like the brand new ones. And she's like, well, and she was kind of weighing the options. Like, well, this is, you know, used obviously technically. So she's like, well, would you take 85 for it? I'm like, well, heck yes. And so it's pretty amazing that I'm able to get like a perfect grade model for under $100, which is like something I wanted as a deal. And I finally got it.
Yeah. I saw you posted a picture of it on the chat. It looks pretty cool.
Yeah. It's a giant box. It's literally sitting behind my computer desk. I don't know when I'm going to get to building this thing, but eventually at some point. Like, it's got a hangar bay. It's got a conversion that you can fit it from the GPO-1 to the full Vernian. It's got, like, core fighters, weapons. It's just a huge kit. So it's just a matter of me just sitting down and working on it. So that was something I got. And then this past weekend I bought the thing I got actually from my friend Eric, because I hung out with him and his family over the weekend, was he sold me his Star Wars, like it's one of the Black Series lightsabers, but it's actually from like the Disney World, and it's the Darth Vader's lightsaber, but it's actually, you can unscrew the hilt and take the sword part out of it, which the Hasbro ones you can't do. And I got a pretty good deal on that lightsaber as well. So I actually own one of those like Black Series lightsabers now. Cause my thing, I was actually going to go into this with, since we were talking about Toys R Us, where we went over to the Greenville Toys R Us, cause you posted up a link where how they delayed the liquidation by a day.
Yeah, I just happened to see that on Twitter. It was like the top Twitter moment was that they delayed liquidation for a day. It's just like Toys R Us. And it's like,
yeah,
isn't that where Zionic lives? Like, how?
Yeah, that's, yeah, so we, yeah, me
but
and
then you said that they just like marked it down and then marked it back up or something crazy like,
yeah,
that.
So
it was not even a real sale.
Yeah, so here's what Toys R Us did, and this is what I was told about from somebody on Facebook, and I didn't believe them. I was like, no way, that's stupid, because I figured, like, once liquidation starts at a store, like, they can't alter the prices anymore. So I guess for them, by delaying the liquidation, they went in there and upcharged things 10% or more than what they are, so when they start the liquidation, they're actually keeping the same prices as if they were selling them. So that's just stupid. So then we went in there and it was like, people were like, there was a long line. Yeah, there was a long line for people getting stuff off for 10%, which, I mean, what are you doing by then? You're just saving on taxes. Like, there's no freaking point.
This is actually hilarious because there was something else on the chat. Like, they're going to, the same corporate parent that owns Toys R Us is about to reopen KB Toys.
Yes, KB Toys is coming back.
They're trying to just do this as a way to sell merchandise by acting like it's a sale, but it's actually not. And now people just think that they're getting a good deal because the word sale is there, but the prices have been lowered.
Yeah. Some things have been taken, they didn't change, but it seemed like the stuff that was more expensive, they raised the prices on. I think it was a lot of stuff in there. So they went in there and repriced everything, which is just ridiculous. I was with Eric on Friday. We were going through Toys R Us before we saw Pacific Rim 2. Which I can talk about that movie briefly. man. So we're going through the store. The thing with Toys R Us is the fact that they had a Bandai display of their Bandai items near the anime section stuff. So when we went in there, they completely got rid of their Bandai display. So somebody from the corporate office of Bandai, they must have had somebody go out to every single one of these Toys R Us's and take their material from them. Like, no, you're not selling our display stuff. We're taking this back with us to headquarters. So which I found so interesting. For me, it was just like, we're looking at, like, they had like a ton of Gundam stuff, which I think no one's going to touch. And I'm just
Josh
like...
Josh mentioned that there was some of his too. Like these tiny little Gundams?
Yeah. Yeah, they had a bunch of those. But they're not gonna raise the prices on those things because I don't think they don't even care. I think it's like the major stuff that like they're gonna try to get as much as possible out of. Like I know the lightsaber black series that the black lightsaber series is one of the things they were gonna raise the prices on for sure. But since I already have my lightsaber, I don't have to worry about going to Toys R Us now to get one because that was kind of the only thing. I mean, if there's still like the bunch of those like Gundam heads and stuff and like the. Build a little mini, like, Gundam models. I might as well buy, like, a whole packet of those and just resell them online or take it to a con and just resell them. I don't know.
There's probably a lot of people going to Toys R Us.
Yeah. There's other people that have these little, like, you know, stores at cons that are going to buy these at, like, you know, like 50% off and buy, like, the whole packet because no one else is going to touch them. Bring them to an anime con and sell them for, like, you know, $8 a thing or $10 a thing or whatever, and then sell out of them there because, you know, dumb weeaboos like me are gonna do that. And so then it's like, you know, if I see that, it's like, well, I can just get the whole cart discounted and just take it to a con and then resell it. I'm probably going to go back to Toys R Us when it's like maybe above 50% off or 60% and just see like what's left there. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it's such a scam. Yeah, because other stores started going through liquidation than the others. Like some have started earlier, like last week, and in others they basically had a delay date of like Thursday. But of course, the one in Greenville had to wait, give it an extra day, and put up a sign like, "No, we're not doing the clearance stuff today. You're gonna have to wait another day." Now, what's also interesting is there's this. Food retail company in the South that there's already stores like there's a chain of stores called Bilo and Harvey's that are now going out of business. So there's a Harvey's. I just drove past it today when I came back into town because I was looking for something at Walmart, and there's a Harvey's that took over an old Bilo that used to be near my apartment, and it's only been there for a couple years, and now I drive past it and there's a store closing sign already on it. When I just heard about the article like 2 days prior. And they're already listing things at like 40% off in that store. But it's just it was a pretty pathetic grocery store. And, so for me, it's like, well, maybe I'll go over there and get like discounted Budweiser for like 80% off or something. But I think all the rednecks are going to beat me to it by the time I head over there. So what does it matter? Yeah, so, like, I haven't even bothered to check, like, the other Bilos in the area to see if they got, like, store closings on there. But it seems like they're liquidating any store that's got a Harvey's on it, which I find interesting. So it's just going to be another blank building again. which I find interesting. That was kind of my gist of Toylana. And then this past weekend I went to South Carolina Comic Con. And basically, it's just a giant buyer's market because I haven't been there in 2 years. And so from there, I got a busted up Orbattler Dunbine Robot Spirits figure. from a guy that sells a lot of stuff I like, but he upcharges it on stuff, so then I'm never really rarely buy things. But he had like a busted up box for a robot spirit, for this Dumbite figure for like $35, and I was like, well, that's probably the lowest he's gonna go, and that's I'll just do that. And I got there's a guy that was selling a bunch of Metal Gear Solid 2 and Metal Gear Solid McFarlane figures, and he had a Solidus figure I really wanted, and the apparently like brand new in box according to him was like $65, and he's got a brand new in box Solid Snake that he wanted like over $100 for, and I was like, geez, I didn't even know these were like this much. But I wound up getting an old Ocelot figure in like a Fortune and still in box from him for like $40 or whatever. And funny enough, like we went to a guy that it was I got my Cable figure from, because I'm gonna see if that goes up in value once the Deadpool movie drops. And we were in there, and the guy had like 4 Thanos figures. And there was a guy that bumped into me in the booth. And apparently the guy that bumped into me, my friend Eric, was able to spot that he wound up boosting his material into like a Toys R Us bag.
Yeah.
Okay. Here. So what happened was that my buddy Eric noticed he was taking a Thanos figure and sticking it into the Toys R Us bag. He wasn't even being slick about it either. And so then my friend went over to the owner's like, hey, that guy took a Thanos off the shelf and put it in his bag. So then the owner went over there to question him, and the guy was like this redneck white trash piece of crap or whatever. He was claiming that he bought the Thanos figure from another vendor, and the vendor had like a Toys R Us, was selling Toys R Us bags, which is impossible, because it's like, you know, mother effer, there's nobody from Toys R Us representing a South Carolina Comic Con when they're going out of business. And it's not even like the stone owner's bag. And so he pulls it out, and this owner pulls it out and sees that the label's exactly the same as his other ones. And he's just like, get the fuck out of here. And he's like threatening to call the cops on him and stuff. And,
did they get arrested?
No, he didn't. The guy just like walked away. He basically had like a couple more figures in his bag, and he had to like turn them over to him. Cause like, he wasn't going to pay for them. He was just there boosting items. And I think he had an accomplice with him, too, that was, like, telling him the okay to, like, boost things or whatever. But they were so, like, not slick about it. it was just kind of hilarious how, like, I mean, who knows what else this guy was boosting as well. But, yeah, it's pretty pathetic. At least on, like, major items like that. And you have a Toys R Us bag, and you're like, no, I got this from somebody else. Like, there's nobody else here that runs a Toys R Us booth or whatever. Like, it's not even, like, the correct bags like everyone else has. Like, you know, get real, dude.
Yeah. That's pretty pathetic.
Yeah. It was pretty entertaining. But, yeah, the owner threatened to call the cops on him, like, and then he finally admitted to it. And then he got his stuff back and hung it back on the shelf, and then the guy walked off. So, I mean, who knows? I don't know what happened to that guy. There was some pretty good artists that were there at the con. I don't have the booklet on me or whatever, but there was a guy that, they had like 2 Batmobiles there. One was from the 89 Batman series, or not series, of the movie. And the guy was like in the full Batman uniform, and he had like, apparently like I asked questions about his wife about the car, and the Batmobile that this guy, he's out of West Virginia, and the body of the Batmobile is based off of like a 95 Chevy Caprice. And it just has like the whole body. He has like a giant body kit on it to look like the 89 Batman Batmobile, which is pretty interesting.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Pictures of this? Or?
I didn't get a picture of the Batmobile. However, there was an artist there. I'm gonna post this up on the slide chat that was selling something that Timmy or Timbox would really love, and he was selling a custom Samurai Jack poster. And I'm gonna post it up in the Slack chat here in a sec.
Is Ashi in it?
No, it's just Samurai Jack, but it looks really awesome. Because we're kind of going around the artist booths, and we're just kind of like looking at stuff. And I'm pretty sure there was some notable like comic book artists there, but I'm not really too familiar like on their work or whatever. But yeah, it's in the Slack chat now. It should be there. It is. Yeah, I figured if Timbox saw that, he'd freaking drool all over it and, like, demand to have it or whatever. But it does lack an Ashi, so maybe he probably wouldn't get it. I don't know.
Yeah, he would probably get it only if Ashi or Lili was there.
Yeah. No, I didn't get a lot of pictures of the con. I didn't think about it.
Did anything else interesting happen there?
There is a piece of anime drama I wanted to bring up. So, this is actually based off of a recent episode off of Dawn and her Anime Nostalgia podcast. Have you ever seen the image of the Miami Mike Dragon Ball Z fan sub image that was been floating around the internet for a few years?
I'm not sure what you're referring to.
Okay.
Who is Miami Mike?
Well, that's what Dawn answered. And there's a whole bunch of drama on the ANN forums behind that. Mike, DB.
Did she dox somebody?
Hold on.
Okay.
Let me pull up like an image of. Okay, I got an image. I got the image of this now. I got an article for it, but it's this one image that's been circulating around the internet for years. And it's off of these. It's on the credits of like this Dragon Ball Z fan sub.
Hello.
That's by this fan sub called Tenasar Video. And the fan sub, or the subtitle on it was basically like, Miami Mike, I remember what you did to me at Dragon Con.
I remember kind of seeing some weird Dragon Ball fan subs on Twitter, but I don't know if I saw this one specifically. But yeah, they figured out who this guy was, or what he did at Dragon Con, or what happened.
Yes. So this is kind of the only part of this podcast I'm going to give... I'm actually going to defend Dawn and her article and why she did what she did between her podcasts. But she basically wrote an article about this sort of like a basic drama on the ANN forum, like on these fan subs. But what she did was, which is what the drama is behind, is she had like an overlay of like the fan sub drama back in the day for as an art, like a brief article on the ANN website. And... so basically, at the bottom of the article, she's like, hey, if you want to know more about this, I have a whole podcast episode about this guy that that worked with Miami Mike. And we go into all the detail about, like, you know, what did Miami Mike do to this guy? What was so bad? And so basically...
Yeah, what did he do?
Okay, so to basically sum it up, it was some year at Dragon Con where Miami Mike... was selling fan sub tapes, and him and this guy Tenasar Video, and I guess they had like a trade or something, and supposedly there's some sort of ethics code among fan subbers where if you do a trade, you don't resell, you don't make copies and resell it, which is apparently what Miami Mike did, and Tenasar Video found out about it, so he decided to trash talk him on his fan subs, which Miami Mike didn't know about until like somebody brought their fan sub tape into the store and said, hey, have you guys seen, like, what Senator Video is talking trash about you? And they're like, no, what are you talking about? So then this patron came into the store, played the end of the tape, and went to the fan sub, and they saw that quote, and then they started belting out laughing, Miami Mike and this guy that Dawn had on named Pat, who worked for Miami Mike. And so then they're trying to think of, like, what the heck did I do this to this Tenasar guy? So then they realized, like, the best they could figure out was that... they think it was a trade that he didn't honor this trade agreement or whatever from like getting his tapes or whatever. It's something really, it's just stupid and ridiculous. But, so what was interesting is how Dawn got to this conclusion and figuring out like all this detective work was the fact that she found like some manga at a thrift shop in Texas where she lives. And there was a card that fell out that had the title of Anime Hurricane, which was a store in Miami. And on the card, had this guy Pat, but then also Miami Mike, or his nickname on there. So she had a way to contact this guy and found out about him online and then got a hold of him. So then they had an episode about talking about this whole backstory with Miami Mike. Who is Miami Mike? What did he do that was so bad? So that's not the real issue with this. So the issue is that everyone for five pages on this Anime News Network forum completely bitched about Zach Birchie's morals as a journalist editor and Don as using this as a selling point to go to some other forum and to another site to get the real story. People are going haywire and demanding there should be a whole transcript on the whole podcast to go with this because they don't want to put the effort into going to another website to get the rest of the backstory on what was written on ANN forums. They think it's so misleading. They think it's they're entitled to get a full transcript. And how dare they put something up? ANN forums needs, you know, the website, they need to go out of business. They just total like anarchy or whatever. So that's basically the gist of it. I went through some of these posts. And one person in particular caught my interest, which I'm going to read out this post out loud. It's by a guy named Jeffrey Sweeney, who on page 4 or 5 reads, petty or whining or whatever you want to call it, it is pretty silly to use an article to piggyback into them wanting us to listen to their podcast. And it does feel misleading. When I click on an article expecting an answer, I don't expect to be pointed in another direction to get that answer. Let me go make a YouTube video where I explain, where I plan to answer a question only to build it up to it. But at the end, tell my viewers they need to just go watch this other video instead. When I could have just cut out the unnecessary filler and they just answer the question in one video. So they consider this article as filler to this podcast explaining this whole backstory. So I continue. Let's see. It's just a waste of everyone's time. At least maybe they'll reconsider doing it again, anything like this again, concerning the apparent backlash going on. This is the best part. What if I were deaf and I couldn't listen to their podcast? Then I'd really have a legitimate complaint on my hands. So clearly they don't think things completely through when they decide to do this.
So it's inconsiderate of deaf people to make podcasts now because they might not be able to listen without a transcript?
According to Jeffrey Sweeney, yes. Because this person, I'm not deaf, but what if I was a deaf person wanting to know the backstory behind Miami Mike and how damn dare they cut me to a podcast where I'm unable to listen to the story behind this?
Well, it is kind of amazing that people will get offended on behalf of a group they're not even a part of, you know.
Yeah.
This guy's not even deaf, but he's offended on behalf of deaf people about the existence of podcasts. But yeah, so this guy was, this is all just some insane feud about, illegal fan sub trading at a convention 25 years ago or something.
Yeah, leading up to whatever this one quote said on an image has been circling around the internet for 10 years. And then now there's an answer to it. And people on the ANN forums, no less, are just trash-talking both ANN and Zach for approving Don's post on there as a big lead-up to a podcast that goes into all this description on it. And that was just one article that got me laughing when I read, like, what if I was deaf? And I'm like, but you're not! Like, they just treat podcasts like it's some ungrateful thing from hell. But even though these are probably the same people that listen to Zach and Jacob talk about whatever on the ANN cast, you know they are.
I hope they aren't the same people that listen to our podcast.
Oh, no, why would they? Because they trash talk this podcast so much. Why would they ever put the time to listen to our podcast trashing on them? Trashing right on a podcast. So, sure. There's another post here. Dang it. I'm looking this up. Hang on.
Another crazy post on the ANN forum.
Yes. Someone complained about how, like, okay. So somebody named Sam Ulep or whatever writes, just to add my experience, this was before Zach edited it. When I saw this article, I immediately sent the link to a friend who I knew was curious about this very issue. After reading the article and realized it didn't contain the answer, I had to email them and apologize and instead email them a link to the podcast, which I guess they're talking about their friend, quotations, but I didn't know what time in the podcast has actually started talking about it. AKA, if you listen to the podcast, people, it's about 30 minutes in is when they get into the story. And this guy's an idiot. So he skims, I'm skipping a paragraph here. So it goes on to, I tried skimming around to find the portion where they actually talked about the incident, but there was no indexing. So instead I was left in the background, or I left it on in the background. I never actually did find where they discussed this in the podcast. They did. It's 30 minutes in, you idiot. Cause if you listen to the whole damn episode, they cover all this. If you don't, skim through crap, you listen to it. And this is just unholy for these people to like listen to a podcast. So it goes, continues, honestly, the way I finally learned the answer to the question posed by the article was the spoiler post above. If you write an article about a mystery whose answer has been discovered, the explanation needs to be in the article, period, or just make the reader feel disappointed like I was. So this is just a couple of excerpts on how butthurt these fans are. And this is where I have to, like, and I basically, like, we talked about this in the old school Otaku forums, and I can link through all this drama, where basically I'm like, you know, Don, you don't owe these people a damn thing. And, you know, like, you don't. Like, this is how, like, you know, if Zach approved granted, you know my feelings on both those two people. But for me, it was like, you know, this is a nice excerpt leading up to, like, you know, this particular fan sub drama. But it's like, you have to kind of sell, this is a good way, I think, to sell a podcast, really. Where it's like, hey, if you want to know the rest of the story, listen to this podcast. And we're going to get into all this detail about it that it's so much for me to talk about into, you know, writing an article. You might as well just listen to it, which I think it's, like, easier to do. But some people like to sit there and would read hours and hours of a transcript when you can just listen to it within an hour or so. And you get more context in an episode when people actually use their mouths and they can speak about things. But that is just so unholy on this topic about, you know, this article or whatever, according to the ANN freaking forum fandom or whatever. So that was just something that was just kind of interesting to me. So, like, if anything I'm going to ever stand up for in terms of, like, you know, podcast creators, and especially Don, you know, this is one of these things. So that's kind of, like, my thing I wanted to kind of, like, bring to light was, like, this kind of stupid drama. Because, I mean, I don't know how many people, you know, listen to our podcast and know about, like, the Miami Mike, you know, image. Because it's been circulating on the internet for a few years. And when I first saw it, I thought nothing of it. But now, like, people are like, man, you know, like, who is Miami Mike and what did he do to this guy? And there was all these, like, crazy accusations that came up or whatever that, like, people have come up that I don't know all about. But now it's just kind of, like, you know, laid to rest officially, that the case is closed. And I guess for me, like, I'm kind of saying this as a defense for other people out there that do podcasts that, like, you know, you got to come up with a creative way to get your stuff out there for people to listen to it. And I'm pretty sure a lot of people, like, heard this episode, so then that's more traffic for her site. You know, power to her or whatever. But, like, in this case, like, I just seen, like, all this butthurt, like, fanboys just rambling. I mean, I just had to read that part where people just go the extreme of, like, well, what if I was, like, incapable of listening to, what if my earbuds were busted and I just didn't have the money to pay $5 for a, crappy pair of cheap ones, then, you know, I'm entitled to know the story. How dare you? Yada, yada, yada. So that's kind of that was my main thing to bring up in closing remarks was that segment there. Oh.
So, you get pretty worked up about the forum thread. This is all on the ANN forum, 4 or 5 pages of people complaining like this?
Yes. Quality complaining by anime fans.
Did you post in the ANN forum? I don't know if you have an account on there.
No, I'm not going to join that excuse me, shithole of a forum. No way.
Yeah, I don't know if I have an account or not. I almost never post if I do have one. I may have made one years ago, I forget. But yeah, I mean, it's hardly worth going on that forum because the threads do tend to be very stupid, very petty grievances of people yelling at each other about stuff like this.
Yeah, it's... I mean, honestly, like, I thought nothing of it. I'm like, oh, well, I'm like, yeah, sure, I'll listen to this episode. I mean, like, granted, like, I'm not a huge fan of Dawn's content and her podcast or whatever, but, like, you know, this has me inquired, this has me intrigued. I want to listen to it. I want to know this story. And it's a very good episode if you guys listen to it. So I am going to promote that episode for her on her behalf. I think for me, like, it's just one of these things where it's like, you know, look, maybe I'm not on the best terms with her. Maybe, you know, like, maybe she's talked behind her backs before. I mean, we've kind of brought her up, like, I remember you mentioned, like, about, like, a few episodes ago, like, it might have been her talking behind her back about, like, oh, these anime podcasts are a red flag if they talk about politics or whatever. And you're like, we're kind of the only ones that do that. So, like, maybe she is calling us out then. But in this particular case, like, I'm actually like, you know what, Don, good for you. Like, this was interesting. Like, I think you did a good job. And, you know, it led me, like, you know, it's a good way to promote your podcast by having this article on there that people can check out. And, I mean, like, if Zach Birchie approved it, then he's the main editor of the site, then, you know, it is on him. And that's kind of like this thing I brought up. So, like, you know, if people want to know, like, about the Miami Mike thing, if it's on their mind, like, you know, here's where you go, here's how you find it, and here's what people are saying behind it, which is just completely ridiculous. So I think I quoted it on the forum. I'm going to pull up whatever I might have said. I don't even know where that freaking post is. Oh, okay. Maybe. No, I think it is. Oh, here it is. I did find it, so it's still up here. I mean, what I said was, like, you know, I don't think it's wrong for you to promote this article. Oh, here it is. Yeah, if they want a transcript, tell them to make their own. You owe them nothing, because why should you? I'm just skimming through this, and it's just a sore ass. It's sore asses being king sore asses. So, I said it's sore asses being king sore assosauruses. I don't know why I thought that was a good insult. And someone complained how, like, you know, this is just an advertisement, and, like, I can't run the ANN site because it crashes my computer. They're like, how dare they put more promotion stuff on here and advertising when I can't even navigate? Yeah, that was someone else's complaint too. And I wrote, like, someone complained because ANN crashes their POS computer. How is it anyone's fault? They can just read the site of the viewer in HTML. It's not that hard. But, whatever. So, yeah, that's basically my thing. But, go check that out. So, geez, we're almost 3 hours in recording. Holy crap.
I bet, like, 2 hours of that is your closing remarks.
Yeah, well over an hour of that is closing remarks for sure.
So did you finish talking about both cons before you got off on this?
This tangent. Yeah, I guess the only thing I could say about Pacific Rim 2 is that it's really good. There is Easter eggs in it relating to Gundam, and that's all I'm going to really say. I like the movie. I don't think I liked it as much as I did the first movie. I mean, I got to rewatch the first movie anyways. I'd like to watch it again. But no, the second one was pretty good.
I haven't seen it yet, but yeah, it looks good from the trailers and stuff.
Yeah, they add in, like, more mechs. There's a bigger, like, kaiju monster at the end. I mean, I guess I can go ahead and say the spoiler or whatever, but or the Easter egg. But it's pretty apparent if you watch the movie. They have the they're fighting in Tokyo, of course.
Is Godzilla there or something?
No, they have the Unicorn Gundam statue in one shot.
Oh, yeah. That's a good shout out. I wonder if they kind of made this for the Asian market, it seemed like, because it did so well in China.
Yeah, no, it's not going to do well here at all, but it's going to do very well in the Asian market. And not only that, they had an Anaheim Electronics sign or emblem, like, on another shot, like, briefly as well. So there's a couple, like, cameos like that. I'm pretty sure there's probably a whole lot more cameos in the movie that I just didn't pick up on. So if I see it again, I'm like, oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Well, that's good that it was a good movie. I'll have to check it out at some point.
Yeah, they brought Charlie Day's character back in this, and they were able to find a good use for him as being an antagonist. And that's all I'm gonna really say. And they kind of relate it to Mount Fuji as, like, where, like, the kaiju monster needs to go, and yeah, it's. All in all, it didn't feel like it had enough robot battles in it. It seemed like it was leading up to it. I even, like, brought my iPod with me, And I had my Bluetooth headset, so like I had my super robot playlist that I made when I watched the first one. So I was like, oh, awesome. So when, yeah, I did play it again. Cause I got my iPod, my iPod charged, and I was like, oh, I could just listen to the playlist I had when I saw it the first time. This is going to be awesome. And I felt like there wasn't enough, like, battles except for like the middle briefly and then like at the very end. And it was just more like character development. So that's kind of like maybe my only complaint on the movie. But other than that, it was, I mean, it was still a really good movie.
Did it seem like it had a lower budget than the first one or a higher budget or about the same?
I think it was about the same budget. They did leave it up to like a third to like for a third movie to be made. Cause then they left it off. We're like, you know, we're not going to wait for them to come to us. We're going to go to their dimension and fight them or something. And that was kind of like
gonna be the next plot.
If they want to get the funding to make a Pacific Rim 3, then that's where it's definitely going to lead to. It was kind of that same premise where how Independence Day 2 left off, where Independence Day 2 was like, we know where the homeworld is at, so we're gonna go and attack them and finish this fight. And I'm thinking, wait, we gotta wait another 20 more years? I'm gonna be an old man by then.
I only saw the first Independence Day, but yeah, I guess the second one didn't really do that well. And
no,
compared to the first one in the box office, they might not even make a third one.
I kind of wanted to make a third one now that they like left it off, like we should have a sequel now because. Now they're going to go to the home planet, so they got to fight some way and fight, you know, take out these alien invaders. And Independence
Day. Like every movie these days has to end with some way where it's open for another one to
yeah.
be made.
But my thing, like, nobody was asking for Independence Day 2.
Yeah. Nobody even thought of it.
No, I didn't even think of it either. It was like the first movie is a good one shot. Like, it's one and done. Like, that's all you need. And then, yeah, now with this one, it's like. We're gonna go to their home planet and bring the fight to them, and I'm like, I don't want to wait 20 more years for Independence Day 3.
Yeah,
yeah, that's ridiculous.
Maybe they'll make some spinoff, like a video game or something that deals with the plot of what they plan for the third one. If they can
but not everybody plays video games though. So then, like, I don't think that would work well.
No, they did that Ghostbusters 3 video game because there was never an actual Ghostbusters 3 movie that got made, but there was some sort of game that they made 10 years ago or something with some of the original actors.
Oh, that's true. That is true, yeah. And I heard that game was actually really good.
Yeah, I've always heard that, but I've never actually played it.
No, neither have I.
I mean, it's supposed to be much better than the 8-bit Ghostbusters that James Rolfe reviewed all those years ago.
Oh, yeah.
The NES one that's supposed to be really bad. That like one of the best AVGN episodes was him reviewing that.
Yeah. Oh,
Ghostbusters! It's got like that early computer voicing of someone saying Ghostbusters. Like you don't
but
really
very,
hear that much in the
yeah,
NES.
But it's very garbled. Like Ghostbuster.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like a human being saying it. It's like a robot trying to.
But I am out of steam, man. We're right at 3 hours. Holy crap.
So for future episodes, I guess we should try to give people some sort of teaser. The Avengers movie comes out in about a month, so we'll probably end up doing a review of Infinity Wars when that comes out.
Yeah, so we got Deadpool 2, we got the Solo movie, we got the Avengers movie, we've got Ready Player One that comes out. Oh crap, that comes out this weekend.
Player One comes out that soon?
Yeah, it comes out. Yeah, because I know it came out before Pacific Rim, or comes out after Pacific Rim 2.
Oh, right.
I feel like I'm gonna. I just want to rent Ready Player One and watch it.
Uh huh.
That might be the best bet, or find a cam rip of it online and watch it that way.
Yeah, I guess it would be cool to see on the big screen all those characters crossing over.
Yeah. Because if you got the swordfish and the Gundam, it's like, I want to see them on the big screen and be part of that fan pandering thing. There's so many people so butthurt over that movie. Like, I guess it's a fan pandering thing. And it's like.
It is, but
like, at least it looks good.
Yeah, it could be. It seems like all the trailers for it have been very solid.
Yeah, it's just gonna be a dumb fun action movie, and like that's all I expect. It's probably gonna be better story wise than the books because like you know, people like now reading the books and just saying how horrible they are. But like, if it's brought up to a movie, it's probably going to be really well done.
Probably.
It seems like it was written to be made on the big screen, and that's perfectly fine.
Yeah. Maybe that was the original plan. I don't know. He was just writing about stuff he was passionate about, but it must be beyond his wildest imagination to be able to get the license to have so many big characters all.
Yeah, that's like the almost near impossible part. It's just like, man, like that's, you know, there's so many people out there that want to do what you just did, and you just were able to get it done. And
can you imagine how many people are going to see that movie, and then they're like autistic, and they think that they can write a movie like that, and that it's going to get made like the Tim Box style of people?
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Like, what is Tim Box going to do when he sees that movie? He's going to, like, he's going to come up with a new Dexter's Odyssey that has, like, every Cartoon Network character ever in it or something.
It's going to take 20 years to make and produce. He still hasn't. Yeah. It's taken him 10 years to talk about how he wants to make Dexter's Odyssey, and he said he'll get that done in 10 years.
Yeah. It was supposed to have already come out years ago, I think.
I know. Yeah. Good. Work on one movie at a time. You're not James Cameron, the greatest pioneer.
Yeah. Well, I assume all those Avatar movies are going to have to come out at some point, but who knows when.
I'm glad he's not in charge of making the Battle Angel Alita movie, because now we can actually get it made. And that's like the one movie I want to see this year. So, yeah. I mean, like, I want to see Deadpool 2 because it's got Cable in it. That's basically it. But, I mean, other than that, like, I mean, I'll see the Han Solo movie. And there's some other stuff coming out this summer. I mean, yeah, there's Avengers Infinity War. Because I usually kind of wait on Star Wars, like, about a week or so after it comes out. But we'll see.
Yeah,
because it comes out when I'm at Animazement, and I think Eric wants to come with me. And if that's the case, he's like, yeah, we can watch it Thursday night at a midnight showing. And I was like, I mean, I don't have to do anything at the con. Like, Josh isn't selling stuff anymore. So I can actually, like, enjoy the con for once, like, at the first time in, like, the past 6 years.
Yeah.
I don't know what else I can add for closing remarks.
Yeah, I think we've said enough here.
We're gassed out for our podcast in the month of April. I mean, there's over 3 hours of content for this. Like, there should be no complaining from anybody, but we don't really get any complaints, so I'm good with that.
Yeah.
We got
a little appearance by Daft.
Yeah, we had a cameo appearance by Daft, so Daft showed up. He actually acted pretty good this time. I commend him.
He didn't really derail it.
No. All right. Next episode is, I know we talked
Avengers
about a bunch of
or something.
Yeah, maybe. We can probably get like a quick anime review in, maybe.
Maybe.
We can probably get an OVA something. I don't know. We'll figure it out. I know we made like that State of the Union podcast, and a lot of my big things we need to watch is like the next Takahashi versus Tomino episode, because it's been almost 2 years since we put out the last one.
Well, we talk about that at the end of every episode that episode. And
it's going to happen once. You know, if we talk about it, it's eventually just going to show up eventually one day.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't have to put the actual effort into making that happen. Although we need to. We'll work on the kinks for that. So, that's gonna conclude this episode. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time with whatever the review might be. Could be anime related. Could be a Marvel movie. Probably more likely it is a Marvel movie. When does the next Avengers come out? Is it in April?
Yeah, I don't know exactly.
Well,
April something. Avengers Infinity War date. April 27th.
Well, fuck.
So about a month from now.
It's going to be Avengers then, more than likely. That answers that question.
Something else.
Yeah. All right, so we're gonna bounce out of here. Thank you for listening. Catch you later.
Later.
Bye.
19 M's like Miami Mike. Young OG like Miami Mike. Pull up two Bentleys like Miami Mike. In this club with bad bitches stunned like Miami Mike. Miami Mike. Miami Mike.
Miami Mike.
19 M's like Miami Mike.
Miami Mike.
Miami Mike. Four chains down like Miami Mike. Mozzie, y'all know folks, I'm with Miami Mike.
My OG did.
Over 5 years for selling white. Care about the penny, he had a golden jimmy. Before he met Soldier Boy, he was already rich. Bank account, looking like a phone number. Dead man fighting in my pocket.
Dolphin fans, this is Miami Mike. I'm in the end zone of MetLife Stadium with the Jets. I'm telling you, this Sunday, Dolphins are going to stomp on the Jets. We're going to stop them. We're going to take them down. We're going to stop the Jets this Sunday. Right at Miami Mice. All Dolphin fans, join us for Dolphin Jets. We're going to take them down. We're going to stop them. That's right. Stomp on the Jets this Sunday at Miami Mice. It's Dolphins Jets live from London. 8:30 a.m. doors open. Kickoff is at 9:30 a.m. Fins up. Game on.